Hold up, that was 50 this week?
Yeah, he said 50 on Wednesday, potentially. Not going to get ahead of myself here. But
I'll get ahead of myself. I'll book a tee time right now. If you run a golf course, let me know if you're open on Wednesday, please. 312-981-7200. Thanks so much, Kevin. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you should have seen Andy in here already practicing his swing this morning when I walked in.
Oh, that's nice, yeah.
He supposedly wants to be a righty. He's a lefty. He wants to, I don't know. He was goofing around.
Wait, he's trying to do both sides of the swing? Yeah. Fix the one side first.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Then become ambidextrous or whatever it is.
Don't get too cocky.
Switch swinger. All right. Hey, this is a legal show. You may not know it from that little tease. My name is John Hanson. This is Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. And we had a long show today. We're almost twice our normal length. We're taking you all the way up to Blackhawks pregame with my good friend Joe Brand at 6:30. And we got a lot to cover. We're going to talk about we don't say this very often, bipartisan pieces of legislation that have passed recently. One involves healthcare costs and keeping them down. Whoa, that's pretty cool. Another one involves harassment at the workplace. And we're talking hugely supported by both parties, passing the House, Senate, signed by the president. And we're going to talk about what those mean to you from a legal perspective as well. But let's go ahead and jump into the question of the... Oh, we're going to talk prenups too. I can't wait to talk with Jim. I love her. But we'll talk more about what's coming up in a bit. But the question of the day, which you can get into right now, 312-981-7200. Although once thought of as relatively harmless, now seven states completely ban what? 312-981-7200. It was once thought of as harmless, but now seven states completely ban what? That's coming up on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association on WGN. Here's more of my voice. Oh, thank you very much, Ernie. He does the voice there. I'm John Hanson. That's the voice you've got here on 720 WGN. This is Let's Get Legal. It's powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Yeah, we're going to get to Neil Gainsburg in a little bit. He wants to talk about some new laws that do protect people against surprise medical bills. Good news on the healthcare payment front? My golly, we want to talk about that. Of course, there's always a catch. You got to make sure you know what the law is to protect yourself, just in case you still get billed for something you shouldn't. Neil will explain in just a little bit. And you also heard there the fine folks from Allen and Glassman Chartered are coming in. That's Gemma Allen and Todd Glassman. Excited to talk to them. With Valentine's Day quickly approaching, we decided to talk about prenups. Because I guess that makes sense, right? If you're falling in love or getting engaged on Valentine's Day, some heads up about what prenups are. There's a lot of myths about them. Some of them that Gemma and Todd are going to clear up for us. There's some frequently asked questions we can help you answer, and really anything about divorce. They're going to be here for the entire 4 to 5 o'clock hour. So get your questions in now. We're going to talk about no-knock warrants. They've been in the news a lot lately for some tragic cases. There's got to be some purpose and some good things out of them, right? Wouldn't you think so? Maybe there's a lot of things that we don't hear about that are successful with no-knock warrants. Anyways, a professor from the University of Illinois Law School is going to join us. And Jeffrey Colwin going to stop by as well, telling us about a new law that really protects workers who claim that they've been sexually assaulted or harassed in the workplace. But the question of the day is a real stumper. So we're going to give away a good prize for it, $50 to 5050 Restaurant Group, to be used at any one of their 14 fantastic establishments all over Chicago. That includes Roots Pizza, which is really, really good. The phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Though once considered relatively harmless, this is now completely banned in seven states. Get a guess in, 312-981-7200. You can take a wild guess in the dark. It's okay. We'll get it through process of elimination. Well, we've got a whole long show today. We got till 6:30 this evening, till Blackhawks hockey, to hopefully get a correct answer. Because if you don't get it today, it rolls over. And it doesn't roll over to Your Money Matters on Monday. It rolls over to Let's Get Legal the following week. So if we don't get the answer today, everyone's going to have to be on pins and needles till next Saturday until we get an answer. So 312-981-7200. I see the phone lines lighting up. Tell you what, let's take the break now, and we'll get a couple answers after this here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association on WGN. This is Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Neil Gainsburg, how are you doing here, my friend?
Fine. How are you today?
You okay if I take a couple guesses? You didn't know the answer to the question of the day, did you?
No, I do not know the answer.
You'll have to stay tuned. Maybe we'll get it while you're still sitting in the chair.
It's a fascinating question, I have to say.
Oh, I appreciate that. I thought of it today. It is thought of as relatively harmless, seven states now completely ban what? And our first guess is going to come from Jan here today. Jan, how are you doing on this Saturday afternoon?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. What is your guess to the answer?
Decline cats.
You know, that's an interesting guess, and I went ahead, I looked up something. Austin, the city, is the latest to ban cat decline. A lot of cities and states do it, and the last reading I saw said that 8 states, I believe, ban it completely, with other municipalities doing it. So you're really close, but that's not the answer to the question of the day, Jan. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Thank you.
Have a great day. Let's go to Scott. Scott, you're on WGN. Hey, Scott.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What's your guess?
Pop Rocks candy.
Pop Rocks candy. It's not the answer I'm looking for. Ridding, you'll have to look up and see if there is 7 states, and we can at least give you a high five there, Scott, because it's not the answer to the question of the day I was looking for, at least. Do you like Pop Rocks?
I do enjoy Pop Rocks.
Yeah, I think you could still use... Neil, you have any idea about Pop Rocks? You a Pop Rocks lawyer that ever come up in your cases?
No, sorry.
No, okay.
I'm not big into Pop Rocks, but it was a great guess. Great answer.
Okay. All right, Neil, let me do the hosting. Okay, Scott.
Sorry.
Yeah, there we go. Scott, I'm sorry. Thanks for chiming in. Kim, you're on WGN. Hey, Kim.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How's your day going?
It's going pretty good.
Any guesses to the question of the day?
I do. Is it vaping?
Vaping. Great guess. We'll have to check how many states ban vaping right now. I'm giving Iridian a lot of homework. As you can probably tell, that's not the answer to the question of the day. I'm sorry, Kim.
All right, have a good one.
You too. Let's go to Dave. Dave, you're on WGN. Hey, Dave.
Greetings and salutations.
I always love when you call, Dave. How's your day going?
Lousy, but I'm beginning to accept it now.
There we go. We'll turn it around for you. Maybe you'll get the answer to the question of the day. What's your guess?
How about coal-fired power plants?
Coal-fired power plants are definitely banned in Hawaii. I found an article from a couple years ago that Oregon was also banning. In fact, they were the first state to do it. New York and Washington also passed similar measures in 2015. That is 5 on my list. I can't find an updated answer for you. So, Dave, there's a chance you're correct, but it's just not the answer to the question of the day. I'm sorry, my friend.
No problem. It's, I was close, but no cigar.
Yeah, exactly. Have a good day, Dave, okay?
Thanks much.
All right, we're going to pause a little bit here to the question. Oh, by the way, we got an answer. 13 states banned vaping to the earlier caller. I see a lot of people are continuing to call in. We'll try to get to it just a little bit later on. But let's get to Neil Gainsburg and why you're really here, not just to listen to our answers to the question of the day, but to talk about a new law that has gone into effect this year. Is actually signed by President Trump as he was outgoing President Trump in December of 2020. And it was part of a bigger bill that had a lot of other things, some COVID relief in it too. But what does it pertain to our audience listening today? It has to do with healthcare, right?
Yes, and medical bills.
It's called the No Surprises Act.
Yes.
Which, boy, billing in healthcare has a lot of surprises, right?
Exactly. When you go to the hospital, it's not like going to the shoe store where you see prices on the walls.
Uh-huh.
You go to the hospital, you get your services. If it's an emergency, you get checked out. Hopefully you go home quickly. Nothing's too bad. But you never see the prices on the wall. And then you get that bill weeks later, months later. And what does that bill sometimes have? Surprises.
Mm-hmm.
Huge bills that you never thought you would ever get for maybe having a test or some sort of service at the hospital. And that's what this No Surprises Act is supposed to do. It's supposed to stop those surprises so you don't get surprises in the mail or in the email about what your billing is from providers.
I'm surprised it's called No Surprises. Because it can't eliminate every possible surprise, right?
Of course, they
okay.
can't.
All right, so it's not going to be like you'll know every little dime that might happen before they put you under for something, right? There are things that happen along the way. So what does this act specifically tackle with surprises?
Well, it's more geared towards health insurance because most people have health insurance through their job.
Mm-hmm.
And health insurance companies and health insurance plans have networks, as mm-hmm. we all know. So you have to go to network doctors, and if you go to your network doctor, the charges are less mm-hmm. than if you go to an out-of-network doctor. So most of the surprises that people were seeing is that they go to the hospital, and the hospital by itself is in-network.
But right, the doctors, so they say, okay, I know this hospital's good. Green check mark. I think that anything that happens in this hospital, I'm covered, right? wrong.
Right, wrong. Exactly. Okay. Right and wrong.
Okay.
It's right that if you go to the hospital's an in-network hospital, so when you get that hospital facility bill, it's going to be an in-network charge that your insurance company will pay or, you know, do what's proper at negotiated rates so you get the benefit of being health insurance plan, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
But the doctors that work at the hospital, that run the radiology, that do the anesthesiology, that do emergency room physicians, they bill separately. Mm-hmm. They don't bill through the hospital. They're contractors. They're employed. They have different billing agencies. And some of those doctors for those services may be out of network that you would never know about until you get that bill in the mail. And so that was the biggest issue that was addressing patients and consumers, is that they would get charges out of network for these doctors, even though the hospital itself was in network.
Okay, so let's break this down. Let's try and put like a real world example to this. Let's say you're in a car accident, not super serious, but serious enough you go to the hospital. So you go into the hospital that is in your network, right? I assume. And you get in there and they have to do an x-ray. Are you telling me that the radiology could be out of network?
Yes, the radiology could be out of network. The actual ER physician could be out of network, because whoever's seeing you while you're in the emergency room bills separately than the hospital. The ambulance ride could be out of network. So when you get into that ambulance after you've been in an accident and you're injured, you're not thinking of what the charges are going to be. Nobody's thinking of that.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these ambulance rides are out of network. Oh, we don't work with your health insurance, therefore we're going to bill you $5,000 instead of, you know, $1,000, and then you pay your co-deductible or your co-pay of a few hundred dollars.
And they don't tell you that as they're driving you around. No, they just say, here you go. And they're just trying to do the best they can, I assume.
Right. I mean, obviously, first responders and paramedics are not into billing.
Right.
They don't do the billing.
Right.
Some separate billing company that works with the ambulance, whether it's a private ambulance, sometimes people have to travel private ambulances, or some municipalities, they work with separate billing companies, and they're not all networked with some of the health insurance, especially if your employer does not have a networked health insurance. And so it could cause an issue right when you're in that ambulance. And then when you get to the hospital, the ER physician, the radiologist who's reading the x-ray, if you need to have surgery, the anesthesiologist, if you need to see a specialist where they have to, you know, do a consultation for a heart issue, a cardiologist could be separately, a neurologist, if you see a neurosurgeon, that could be separate. There's all these different doctors that you could see if you go to the hospital. Now, in your scenario, when somebody's not really that injured, you're not probably going to see that many higher charges, because mm-hmm. you're only getting services of a quick emergency room physician, maybe a radiologist.
Fair.
Yeah. So it's not going to be thousands and thousands. It becomes thousands and thousands when you have to have more extensive medical treatment.
So what does the act prevent? Does it simply say that they just have to be upfront and tell you that, hey, this person's out of network? Or can something be done after the fact to rectify the bill to make it cheaper?
Well, the first thing the act does is provide more notice
okay.
and consent to the consumer. Now, in an emergency situation, that can never be provided. So in an emergency situation, if you go to a hospital, you have to be charged an in-network rate if through your health insurance plan. So if you have health insurance, which most people thankfully do, through their job or through some other means, then in an emergency situation, the No Surprises Act says that whatever emergency room services you're getting has to be at an in-network rate.
So, like, okay, I just want to make sure I'm hearing this right. So let's say, God forbid something happens to me. I don't even want to say that. Let's say someone in this building, I don't know, has a heart problem or they have chest pains and they think it's an emergency, they got to go. The ambulance is going to want to take them to the closest hospital, right? They take them there. That's out of someone's network. This bill now says that, hey, look, it was an emergency. You're only going to get charged for your in-network costs.
Exactly.
Wow, that's big.
That is big. That's big. So it helps people in emergency situations, especially while a lot of these bigger plans, most people have some of the bigger plans throughout the country. A lot of these plans are not networked with, as we said, the individual doctors that you see. So when you go to this hospital, it might be networked, but that like surgeon who does the surgery, cardiologist who does the chest pains, radiologist who reads it might not be in network
right.
because they're differently employed.
Right.
So this way, if there's an emergency room services, you're going to be charged in network if you have health insurance. Now, if you don't have health insurance, the act is sort of a little bit more vague
okay.
as to what can be done in that situation. And I think there's a dispute resolution means through the Center of Medicaid and Medicare Services through the federal government that is going to have certain pricing for people who are uninsured. Those bills like the hospital cannot all of a sudden just charge you this immense amount of money
right.
because you don't have insurance. So the regulations are supposed to help those people. You could dispute the bills. One of the things about this new act is it sort of puts the burden on the patient. So if you get this bill and you don't think it's right, then you have to file the dispute with the federal government through the center of Medicaid and Medicare services. So you have sort of the burden to do that. And so that's what the regulations are still being implemented because the law is just going into effect in January 1st. And like most laws, there's a lot of vague stuff that they're relying on the Department of HHS to fill in the blanks.
Right. Okay. We said a lot there. I want to make sure we understand. So we talked about an emergency. You go to an in-network or not a network place. You're going to be given the in-network rate after it's all said and done. What about, and then you said also there should be more transparency. So let's say it's not an emergency. They at least have to let, they're supposed to let you know and show you the price or at least tell you it's out of network. Like what are they required to do?
Right. They're supposed to give you a notice of a good faith estimate of what the charges will be. So you can see that, especially if you're an out-of-network doctor who wants to charge an out-of-network, or an out-of-network provider, I should say, wants to still charge an out-of-network amount because they're not networked with the health insurance. They have to give you a good faith estimate and also tell you like what your health insurance, if you have health insurance, is going to pay. And then you have to consent to that, some sort of written consent that you agree to be charged this, you agree that this is an out-of-network service, and you still go forward with the service and with that type of billing.
Is it only required if it is an out-of-network service? If it's in-network, do they have to give you all that stuff too?
In-network, the law does provide that you have to give good faith estimates, and I even think health insurance, so that we're giving some sort of more transparency, as you said, so that people know when they go to the doctor or they go to a hospital or they're getting some treatment what these costs are going to be. Because deductibles are getting higher, copays are getting higher, so the federal government is stepping in to say, look, when people go to the doctor before they have the services, they should have some notice and transparency about what the cost will be.
This is a big deal.
It is.
Yeah. This has been one of the major complaints that people have about health insurance. And boy, there are a lot of complaints out there about our entire healthcare system, which we do not have time to get into the whole thing. But this is a major step forward, and it was done with bipartisan support, which is great to see. Passed both houses fairly easily. Again, it was part of a bigger lump sum of appropriations signed by President Trump, and now President Biden and Vice President Harris, their administration is working on getting this through. Neil Gainsburg, we're going to take a pause in the action. We're going to get some questions on this, too. If you've got one, 312-981-7200, call now so maybe we can do a little research here before we get back on the air. Because it's time for the news at 3:30 with Kevin Wells here on WGN. Neil Gainsburg, you a Jim Blossoms fan or no?
Yes. Very good music.
Very good. You don't sound too enthusiastic about it.
They are excellent. Great songs in the 90s.
Yeah.
And they continue to thrive.
Thank you very much.
2022. Yeah, so they're excellent band.
You better believe it. It's 3:37. This is not a music show. This is Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. We're talking with Neil Gainsburg, Gainsburg Law. Gainsburglaw.com is the best place to reach you, right, Neil?
Yes, Gainsburglaw.com, or my phone number is 312-600-9585.
That's great. We're talking about a new law called the No Surprises Act that is meant to help you when there's a dispute or there's you go to somewhere in-network, and then there's a bunch of out-of-network things associated with it, that there's supposed to be more transparency on the front end. They're supposed to be able to tell you, unless it's an emergency, hey, look, here's what you might be paying. And what else is supposed to be on that sheet, too, Neil, that you mentioned?
It's a way to dispute your bills. So if you get one of these surprise bills that you're not supposed to get under the Act, this notice will give you the phone number and hopefully the website of what to do to challenge the bill and to dispute it through the dispute measures that the federal government puts in place under this bill.
So if they're saying, hey, you're here, we're going to need to get you an x-ray, we're going to need to have you go to a neurologist, they're out of network, or in network, here's a look at the costs, and at the bottom where you sign it, there's also a phone number to call if you get something wrong.
Exactly.
Okay. And if you are in an emergency and you're taken somewhere out of network simply because you have to be immediately, they are now supposed to charge you the in-network cost even if it ends up being out of network.
Yes.
I've got this down.
Yes.
Okay.
That's the basis of the bill, but obviously it doesn't anticipate everything, and so there's little things that still have to be worked out through the regulations, and hopefully the federal government is able to do that, and it's supposed to be a very pro-consumer patient bill.
Let's hope so. We could use it. Let's go to Lori on line one. Lori, you wanted to say something about all this, right?
Yes, I did. I've been in the medical field for 30 years doing billing, and I just want to tell everybody, once a year, request an itemization of charges from your providers, because a lot of times you're overpaying them, you're paying your copay, and you don't have a copay. So sometimes people can have a couple hundred dollars of a refund coming to them. But, of course, the physician doesn't want to dish it out. So
yeah,
just ask for an itemization of charges and see if you get a refund coming.
And that's like once a year, do it from your insurance provider directly?
No.
Oh, for the doctor.
Your providers.
All your providers.
Every doctor you go to.
Okay.
Yep. Ask them for an itemization of charges, including a hospital if you've been to the hospital.
Amen to that. Thanks, Lori, for the tip.
no problem.
I've heard that, Neil, too, right? Or when you get the bill, doesn't mean it's what you have to pay.
Exactly.
Call the hospital and start doing some negotiating.
Or go through your bill to make sure that that are the services that you received, whether it's at your doctor for a yearly physical or you're at the hospital or you have some surgery. Sometimes they bill stuff's wrong. People make mistakes in these bills. And you're the only one who may be able to catch it. The hospital may not catch it. The doctor's office may not catch it.
So if someone's listening to this right now, and they're going to get a bill here for something that happened after the start of the year, January 1st, 2022, and it looks like they're not getting what this law says they're supposed to be getting, can you help out with that?
Yeah, of course. We can definitely help people to see what disputes can be brought and point them in the right direction towards getting the bills challenged under the Act and getting them negotiated properly.
And it's people that like you that actually challenge these things that help make these laws not only stick, it makes sure that they're being implemented correctly, and it actually helps nuance what's happening in the law, right?
Exactly. So us lawyers will fill in the gaps of the law, and you know, as we go and try to help people who have who bring up violations of the law, who find that their bills are not proper, lawyers and other agencies will help to make sure that the providers know what to do and that these bills are billed properly.
Yeah. You know, I always say when we have tax lawyers in here, I'm like, man, that's something you have to read all the time because that law is always changing. I didn't even think people in your world that have to deal with health laws always change. It's probably just as complex.
Yeah. The law is always changing. Health insurance, just the insurance provisions and benefit plans are always changing, and billing for health care is very challenging and difficult. So it's a constant evolving process of trying to make sure that consumers, patients are protected and they're being billed properly.
312-981-7200. If you got any questions, Neil will do his best to answer it. Let's go to Marty. Marty, you're on WGN. What's up, Marty? How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Good.
Well, I've got a question. I'm confused because at the beginning of the year, I had a changeover from a PPO to HMO.
Mm-hmm.
I asked the carriers, I've asked the insurance, is this particular individual, one doctor, not on the network, can I get out-of-network referrals on this? They said yes. But something changed in December with the Illinois Department of Insurance, and I'm confused by this. They're saying something along the lines that I now have to pay out of pocket completely. The bill is mine because the Illinois Department of Insurance says you cannot get a out-of-network and referral with HMO. I don't know the extent of this. I want to dispute this because this cost me a lot of money to go see this particular caregiver. All of a sudden, because I did have to change my PPO to HMO because of the way the company was set up, my company set it up.
And you were told that it would be okay, it would work out.
I was told it was okay, and I talked to my insurance company, and the insurance carrier said, we weren't even notified about this. It was like a week later after the Illinois Department of Insurance said, you know, deferred out-of-network people aren't going to be allowed, so to speak, that we were told about this, and we're having all kinds of problems. And not only that, she said, any money that runs over into this year, unfortunately, we're not able to reimburse. The people have got to pay it out of their pockets.
That sounds that sounds complicated. Neil, any guesses on this one?
Well, it sounds like it might be one of these referral issues. When you have an out-of-network, perhaps it's not going to apply, first of all, under the No Surprises Act because it happened maybe in 2021 and not 2022. 2022 is when this No Surprises Act has gone into effect. But it looks like with out-of-network providers, if you want to get a certain rate under certain health plans so that you're being charged not completely out-of-network, you have to get a referral. There has to be some sort of plan provisions that have to be complied with. And so that you'd have to look at the caller and this patient's plan to see if, you know, the reason he's at this out-of-network service is pursuant to the terms of the plan, or they could charge them for this out-of-network rate, or they could just charge them completely and they won't cover anything. So it's a coverage issue that would all depend on the language of the benefit plan through his employer.
All right, Marty. I don't know if that answers everything completely. I know that you're saying that a new law potentially put a wrench in this.
That was my concern. I'm not sure what that means, but I got to do more digging, I guess, on this.
I think you just need to look at your benefit plan and talk to your HR or whoever helps benefits with your company to find out why there's some sort of referral. It sounds like you went to the Department of Insurance, which is a very good resource when there is a dispute like this. They often provide guidance. And if you still can't figure it out, you should, you know, maybe seek legal counsel.
Now with Neil Gainsburg. He won't
call our
say
office.
It.
Yes.
Marty, that's what I'm saying. Hold on. We'll give out your number, Mart.
312-600-9585.
You get that, Marty?
Yes, I do, actually. And I may be calling you.
No problem. Call us and we'll see what we could do for you, Marty.
Look at Neil. He's like, thanks. Thank you for the call, Marty. Look at Neil being like, oh, you should seek legal counsel. No, you should talk to Neil Gainsburg. Gainsburg Law. He knows what's going on. And if he doesn't, he'll figure it out. Let's go to Pat. Pat, you're on WGN. Hey, Pat.
Yes, how you doing today?
Great. How are you?
Good. A little confused. I'll tell you what happened. We had Blue Cross Blue Shield in Wisconsin. And because of COVID, I guess we got behind and my wife's policy was dropped. I just got a bill the other day talking about what was covered under under Medicare, which was hardly nothing. And because she had to have kidney stones removed.
Oh, surgery?
It says it's not a bill yet. $47,000.
That's no good.
No.
And this was in 2020 and 2021?
It was in 2020, and then we had the blues, and because of COVID, I got behind, and yeah. I made a payment. They said, well, you know, the operation was in, I think it was March of that year, uh-huh. And she wasn't covered. So now all of a sudden they sent me an itemized bill. And it's, I mean, just for the operation alone, not counting just the operation,
right?
$15,000.
Oh my gosh! All right, hold on, Pat. So Neil, first of all, he should be challenging these figures, right? As well, trying to negotiate the prices down. And can he do that at all, Neil?
Yeah, you could always call the providers. They'll try to negotiate with you, especially if there's no insurance coverage and there's no other source of revenue for the bill. That they'll always work with you. These providers, you know, most of them are not heartless. They'll try to work with the patients and the consumers. But, I mean, he brought up Medicare. If there's Medicare involved, he should at least, like, try to contact Medicare or get it rebilled to Medicare. Because if there is a Medicare eligibility here, and I don't know if he's talking about a supplement or if he's talking about an individual plan. But if there's Medicare involved, Medicare should cover some of that, or at least their negotiated rates should apply to this type of procedure.
Have you tried to reach out to Medicare or the provider to negotiate this down a little bit, Pat?
No, I just got the bill the other day, and when I called Anthem, they said, well, can you look in your checks that you wrote and see if, you know, if you paid us then? And I said, you know, because it'll go to Advocate, Aurora Advocate,
okay.
Because that's where the procedures were done. They're the big boys. Now it's different. We got United Healthcare.
Okay.
But, I mean, it was a supplement for Medicare, and it was like $300 a month and things just for her, not counting the RX or the dental.
Oh, jeez.
You know, those are another, you know, and that's basically what she makes in Social Security a month.
We got to figure this out.
I would reach out to Medicare. Medicare should be covering some of that. Talk to the provider. Make sure they're billing Medicare properly. Because this is, if you're Medicare eligible, Medicare should cover some of these services. The supplements, just to supplement some of the things that Medicare does not cover. But Medicare should cover at least, I would guess, up to 80% of some of these procedures. So make sure.
I hope so, because it's a lot.
Yeah, you might just be getting a bill. Look at the bill. It says it may be still pending with Medicare. Medicare hasn't addressed it yet. It just might take some time, and hopefully you get the next one. It shows that Medicare did address it and did pay some of it.
It shows in there what the bill was, what Medicare paid. Medicare paid hardly nothing on anything.
You got to call them, right? You got to call those people and tell
them. Call the providers and make sure they rebill Medicare, and talk to Medicare as well to see what's going on here.
Well, thank you very much for your time. Be safe and God bless you.
Thank you. Sorry you got to go through all that. What's your number again, Neil?
312-600-9585.
And the website?
www.gainsburglaw.com.
You've missed a W in there. It's three W's.
Did I say www?
Yes, you did.
www.gainsburglaw.com.
That's the easy part, Neil. Yeah, exactly. 312-981-7200 if you've got any other questions. One interesting note about this new law, the No Surprises Act, is, you know, people are wondering who regulates healthcare. Obviously, there's federal laws. This is a federal law. States have their own laws, too. So Illinois did actually provide some of these protections before, right?
Yes. Illinois had its own No Surprises Act that was enacted in 2011, and it mainly applied to emergency room services and not every health plan. If a health plan was governed by what's called ERISA, which is a federal law, then the Illinois law did not apply. So the new Federal Surprises Act is supposed to supplement the state laws. And if the state laws provide certain protections, then the federal law doesn't address that. The federal law comes into place if the state doesn't have the type of law. So every state has the right and ability to regulate healthcare and make sure that bills are properly addressed and do this type of stuff that the federal government is doing in the No Surprises Act.
Sounds good. Had a text from the 815. When you buy insurance, it's a contract between you and the insurance company. That's true. A person needs to become familiar with what they have purchased, what's covered, what hospitals and docs are in the plan, pre-authorization, et cetera. It's a pain, but it's true. Even if you disagree with the overall sentiment of having to pay for all this healthcare, blah, 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 that's this person's right, right? I mean, you should really be your best advocate right when you get these plans. I know it's annoying, and I know they send you a bunch of paperwork or it's online. You got to do your homework on this stuff.
Yeah, you should try to read to the best of your ability the benefit plan. There should be a summary description. Often these benefit plans have a little summary, so you could get some ideas from the summary that could help you understand what coverages there are. You should also talk to your doctor in your doctor's offices because they should know what coverages are, and they can reach out to your insurance company to help you determine what's covered and what's not covered, what's network, what's not in network. Finding out what's an in-network versus an out-of-network thing is very difficult. Doctors switch all the time. Providers switch all the time. Health insurance plans switch all the time. So it's very important to make sure that you're out there, you're aggressively looking to make sure this provider is part of your network, that this provider is going to only charge you a certain amount or charge your plan a certain amount. So those are things that you should really do as a patient, is to make sure that you understand your plan and look at the network issues with the providers.
309 texted in saying, deductibles, of course, an important number to look at, but out-of-pocket maximum in-network and out-of-work is really important too, right? Because you want to just, you know, get an ascertain of, like, the worst-case scenario is this is all I would have to pay in a year. That is what out-of-pocket maximum means, correct?
Yes. The Affordable Care Act is supposed to, with certain plans and most plans, get rid of or eliminate that cap on out-of-pocket expenses so that doesn't happen. So that's not really an issue, but some of these plans may have some sort of limitation there. You have to look at the plans and make sure they're complying with the Affordable Care Act and with other healthcare statutes, ERISA as well.
But out-of-pocket maximum means that's the most you would have to pay, even if it cost $1 million to the insurance company, if the out-of-pocket maximum for you is $23,000, which right. is a ton of money. But that's all you'd be right. on the hook for in a year.
So, yeah. So if you're looking at the specific provisions of your insurance, obviously premiums are determined by what your deductible is and what your out-of-pocket is. So if you're saying, you know, what the out-of-pocket maximum, obviously somebody who has $1,000 out-of-pocket maximum in a year versus $5,000 will probably have to pay higher premiums. So that the deductibles and the out-of-pocket expenses all go towards the premiums. But in terms of them putting caps on out-of-pocket expenses so that they don't have to pay, or even caps on what benefits they have to pay, the Affordable Care Act addressed that. If you're looking more towards your out-of-pocket expenses, make sure you read your plan and understand, you know, what exactly is your going to be total expense if you have some sort of medical emergency or you need to go see a doctor for a surgery or any other expensive thing. You'll see what the out-of-pocket expenses can be.
For sure. Let's go to Pauline really quickly. Hey, Pauline, how you doing here today?
I'm fine. How are you? I just happened to catch your conversation, and I wanted to make a suggestion to that caller whose wife had had that, surgery.
Yeah.
Anyone can apply for emergency Medicaid through the state. You know, if it's an emergency situation and they don't have insurance, they can apply for, like, an emergent Medicaid, and typically it will be approved.
Okay, that's good to know. And just go to state through the state, you're saying?
Through the state, Illinois Medicaid. And I know a couple people who have had it, you know, where they come in for an emergency and they don't have insurance. And I work for one of the larger healthcare groups in the area. And the hospitals also sometimes will offer a payment plan, financial plan with no interest.
Yeah, you got to be you got to be your best advocate is what you're saying, for sure.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. You really have to go after them. And they'll also, if depending on the person's income, and it sounds like both of these folks were retired, you can also apply for financial aid where you may be able to get health care at that group. You know, I work for Northwestern Medicine.
Right.
And they will oftentimes provide free health care for up to 6 months based on your financial application.
That's great, Pauline. Hey, I got to let you go. I'm sorry. We're out of time,
yep.
Okay?
No worries. Thanks.
I really appreciate it, though. Neil, where can people go to find out more about what you do? If they need your help, they're dealing with this, and we are getting callers about this. We're getting texts about it. Where should they go?
They can go to my website, www.gainsberglaw.com, or they can give me a call, 312-600-9585. They could also contact the Illinois Department of Insurance, or they can, you know, go to the federal government's HHS website, Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, provides some help there with medical bills and insurance coverage issues.
Neil, thanks so much for stopping by,
Thank you.
We appreciate it.
Happy Abraham Lincoln birthday day.
Hey, you wanted to squeeze that in, didn't you? Yes, for
yes,
sure.
Yes, I did. It was wonderful being part of your show today, John.
Thank you. We'll take a quick break and a little bit more here on Let's Get Legal Power by the Illinois State Bar Association. Let's Get Legal Powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. David Hochberg just texted me. I know we updated during the news. Over $200,000 raised. I got to say, David Hochberg is the man. Incredible work that he did to raise vests or to raise money so our officers can get the bulletproof vests that they need through the Memorial Foundation. And that was a big number. And I just give credit not only to Hochberg, but to all of you listening, just to be able to raise that. And, you know, we got big donations from a lot of people that pop on Home Sweet Home Chicago, but it's the $10, $15, $25 donations and the hundreds of them that came in from WGN listeners just to show that we really are a community that cares. Our radio listening audience, we are a big family. We disagree. We fight on certain things, but we come together for really important projects too. All right, more Let's Get Legal Power by the Illinois State Bar Association coming up in a bit. First break in the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN. We still got another hour of sun here, Kevin. Come on now. Don't sell it short. Okay,
well, woke up this morning, and let me tell you, I thought it was going to be like 40 degrees outside like it was the last couple days because I saw that sun,
right.
And I walked outside to a rude awakening.
No good, right? We're trying to will it to be warmer and maybe 50 by midweek. We will
can't wait.
We'll hang our hat on that, Kevin Wells. Hey, this is Let's Get Legal Powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. I'm John Hanson. We're here till 6:30 this evening, and we've got an entire hour with Gemma Allen, who's one of my favorite people, and Todd Glassman, who I'm sure will be. They're from Allen and Glassman Chartered. We're going to talk about prenups, which is just great before Valentine's Day. All things divorce. You got questions, they've got answers. 312-981-7200. Postnups, anything. We're going to try our best to answer any question you have for the next hour regarding marriage, assets, splitting up, whatever it is, family law. So start getting those questions in. 312-981-7200. We'll start to tackle some of those after this on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association on WGN. Very excited. We already got some phone calls coming in. Keep them coming. 312-981-7200. All things divorce ahead of this Valentine's Day with Gemma Allen and Todd Glassman from Allen and Glassman Chartered. Gemma, so good to see you again.
Great to see you again. I was looking forward to it.
And you're wearing bright colors, which I appreciate.
It's almost Valentine's Day.
Yeah, right?
Almost, right?
Love is in the air.
Well, and prenups, we're going to talk about romancing the prenup.
Yes, and that's an important part about it. It doesn't mean you don't love someone. In fact, maybe it means you love them so much you want to make sure that everyone is covered in case of all eventualities. We'll get to that in a moment. Todd Glassman, welcome to WGN, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, and you're obviously half of Allen and Glassman. A little bit of your background. You, your parents were teachers. What made you decide to get into family law?
My dad taught in Chicago public schools for 35 years. My mom taught special education for 35 years. I saw them every day helping children, helping families, and I thought one way to give back would be get into family law, help parents and kids that are going through a rough time and just try to make their life a little bit better.
Right, because it's a very emotional and stressful thing, family law. And with that anguish, which I'm sure you guys feel too as part of your dealings with clients, but the reward is if you can get someone a fresh start, if you can settle something that keeps someone from getting to sleep at night, boy, that's extra rewarding too, isn't it?
It is. We walk them through to the next chapter, or in the case of a prenup, you walk them into the first chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And either way, you feel like you're advancing the journey, and we're all on one. So
right. And at the end of the day, a lot of these conversations revolve around kids and what could be more important than making sure the kids are A-okay. And you've got two young ones yourself, so you've already had a busy Saturday, I bet.
I've had a busy Saturday. I've already done football with my son, a play date with both of my kids, and here I am.
50,000. And watts now on 720 WGN. So Valentine's Day prenup, why is this so important as a conversation for you, Gemma? Is it something because it's like something we don't want to talk about? It's a joke on a Seinfeld episode, right? Like it's a discussion that's tough.
I think it's a hard discussion to have, and I think it's important because it is difficult. But all money talk, and we talked about this before, all money talk is hard when you love somebody or even if you're friends with someone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's something that in our society we have to face as real. And if you can talk about money, if you can be financially intimate, I think your relationship is much better set going forward. So prenups force you to have that conversation.
Interesting. So obviously it's a mechanism for the what if, but it can also be an introduction to the general basis that sets up a successful marriage anyways.
And your game plan going forward, what I say is you're charting the course together instead of resenting the fact that one person or the other is hiding money, spending too much, and you just slowly get more and more angry. And that leads to divorce.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, as much as we love doing what we do for a living, Todd and I do not advocate divorce. We're
right.
here because it's a service that people need, and we're proud and privileged to produce it, but we don't try to create
right.
it.
You're not pushing it.
Right, we're not pushing it.
At the end
we're
of the day, happy
it.
Families is the ultimate goal. Now, you asked me if I had a prenup.
I did.
And I told you that your good friend Terry Savage already yelled at me because she told me to get one. I didn't, and I don't have one, and we could talk about postnups in a little bit. But then you threw Todd under the bus here. It's a hard conversation to have, even for people that know this world, right?
It really is a hard conversation. I mean, we were speaking in front of a sports team, and one of the athletes asked me if I have a prenup because I keep on talking about why you need to have it. And
right.
I was completely thrown, and I said no, and I should have said, well, I'm a divorce lawyer, so I know what to do. But
yeah.
No, I mean, I honestly, it's one of those things where a lot of couples, they're together for years and they never have this financial conversation before they get married. And what the prenup allows you to do is it really kind of sets a path of this is what our expenses are, this is what we're going to do with bills going forward. There's debts that one of the spouses may not know that the other one has.
Boy, you should know that before you get married.
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh. And plenty of other things along the way, Todd. Sorry to interrupt. Yeah.
No, exactly. And, you know, just kind of have the conversation about retirement assets and liquid assets and real estate. And it really, we find that the couples that are really successful are the ones that are completely transparent from the start.
Do you think that people that have prenups are actually less likely to get divorced in the long run?
I think it is a form of insurance in two ways. One, I think it puts you on a much better track, but if you do get a divorce, it will be amicable. So I really think it's doubly insuring. But I also think that if you break through and talk about money, it's not, you know, it's something that's so taboo that once you do it, I think you're on the road to success.
Yeah. We're just getting started. We're getting some texts in and some questions, too, on the phone line, 312-981-7200. If anyone has to scoot really quickly and they can't listen to the rest of the segment, because we're going till 5 o'clock, Gemma, what's the best way to reach you, all you guys?
Oh, the office is 312-853-3000. Firm name is Allen and Glassman, and ask for either one of us or our intrepid office manager, Vicky.
All right. And wonderful stuff. We're going to continue this conversation next on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association, 312-981-7200. Yeah, phone lines lighten up. We'll chat about it more after this on WGN. This is Let's Get Legal. It's powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. And ahead of Valentine's Day, we're talking about prenups here and all things divorce and family law matters with Gemma Allen and Todd Glassman from Allen and Glassman Chartered. And Gemma, we had a question. The caller had to scoot really quickly. I didn't even understand the question, but you knew it right away. It was about a wife. Lawyer not completing the quadro pension. What was the question, first of all? As best as you understood it.
So the question has to do with a document,
okay,
which is called a qualified domestic relations order, and we call it quadro. And that's a document by which you can split retirement assets that are not otherwise, they're not liquid, and you couldn't do it any other way.
Mm-hmm.
So the only acceptable way to do it, if it's retirement, is with a quadro. But what happens is, at the end of a case, everyone's so glad it's over, I mean, both parties,
yeah,
that they tend to stick the box under their bed, call it the bad box, and move on. But there's some things that have to be effectuated to get the benefit of your bargain.
Okay.
And so if a quadro is being put on your retirement, so it's probably being divided in half,
mm-hmm,
and the wife's lawyer hasn't gone forward with it, which is what our caller said, then you have to do it. Go to your own lawyer and get it done.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are lots of issues then that start to be arising about what value, what's the division date, what should have been the division date, what if the market went up, what if the market went down. So go to your own lawyer. It's kind of upsetting because you think I'm finished with that chapter.
Yeah.
But you're never finished if you have an asset out there that's exposed to be divided, not yet divided.
Okay. Well, like pensions, 401ks, IRAs, that sort of stuff?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's a great question. All right, Todd, why don't you throw on the headsets because we're going to go to Bill here on 720 WGN. Good afternoon, Bill. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good.
Great. What's your question, my friend?
So this is about a guardianship for two my wife's nieces.
Mm-hmm.
They had some trouble where they lived with their mother in Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife agreed to take them in, finish raising these kids.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, and I'm retired. But anyway, so here's the question.
Mm-hmm.
It's about legal guardianship, I guess.
Okay.
Can I do that by going to court myself?
To effectively to adopt the children, essentially? Is that what you're asking?
I just want to make legal guardianship, not so much adoption.
So, yes, this is Todd here. Yes, and you can. You can go into court. Usually, at least in Illinois, it's through the probate division, and you file a petition for legal guardianship. And if you and your wife are both doing it, you can do it together. And that's something that I would certainly seek an attorney in the jurisdiction that you're going to be, residing in with the children.
So it's where you reside is where they have to file this. It doesn't matter if the children were from South Dakota.
Right. It's Cook County.
So if it's Cook County, absolutely. Yeah, you would want to speak to a probate attorney that specializes in guardianships, and you would want to file a petition for legal guardianship over the children.
Okay, and then just one specific question.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible, I did talk to an attorney, and he said the paperwork itself cost about $600 per child to file several different forms with the court. And I'm not saying that's, is that sound about right? And then his fee on top of that.
It sounds somewhere about right. I mean, and the thing about hiring an attorney is the attorney will do all those forms for you. You pay the attorney just like, you know, whatever the retainer is, and they'll handle all those forms for you as part of it.
Right.
And something that is this serious, I mean, I know that a lot of times we want to try and do things ourselves, and I love when people take that on. I just, with something as important as legal guardianship, I know it might cost a little bit more on the front end, and this is me saying this. I always am like, do I really want a lawyer? Sometimes you really do. I mean, that's at least what I'm thinking. So,
and the other thing I was going to say too is, you know, in a guardianship proceeding, it's a good idea to have an attorney, because oftentimes a court may appoint a guardian ad litem and just do an investigation, and you just want to have an attorney really guiding you to make sure that you make the right decisions and do the right things and be prepared.
And there might also be the notion of the parents starting to protest.
Right.
And in that case, you really need an attorney.
Yeah, Bill.
Yeah.
And I think that's great that you and your wife are stepping up to the plate. I mean, that's...
It's commendable. It is. God bless you.
Yeah, really. And Bill, good luck, okay?
All right. Thank you for your help today.
Yeah, I hope that helped. Very good. Bill. Boy, I mean, we need people stepping up in those situations, because there's alternatives that I don't think, if possible, we don't want kids to be going through. 312-981-7200. Here's a question from the 630. How do I enforce declarations in divorce decree if the previous spouse resides in Washington State? I think the question is in just another state. I don't know if there's anything specific about Washington that makes it difficult. Jim, any ideas on that one?
Sure. There are petitions you can do to enroll the foreign judgment here, so that it would be enforceable here. That's one way. Another way to do it, which might or may not be more practical, is talk to an attorney there and talk about, I don't know where the assets are, I don't know where the money is.
Talk to a Washington State attorney.
So talk to a Washington State attorney. And so the location of where the debtor and the assets are might also be another route.
How hard is that to find an attorney in another state?
It's pretty easy.
It is, okay.
It's really easy. I mean, we actually had two or three people calling in on Friday in our office and asking for
Indiana.
And you can help out with that.
One was Indiana,
if you know.
One was Manhattan. I mean, you really want to find out the actual county, and you really want to get referrals that, if you can get a recommendation, or you've worked with somebody that knows somebody there, because you don't want to just start giving out random referrals
to people
you don't know.
Right.
We give out more than one always, and we also try to figure out what the issue is, because there's some people that are better at some things than other.
For sure.
So another approach, right?
Yeah, for sure. 312-981-7200. These are great questions. Our topic of the day is prenups. And I saw in here that, you know, with Valentine's Day quickly approaching, this Dr. Dre example was such a good one, because everyone was like, oh my gosh, he had to pay how much? But his prenuptial agreement, even though he paid a lot of money, saved him a lot of money. Who knows the most about this? Is it Jim or a Todd? This is a huge one that came across, right?
Well, maybe we'll share the story, because
yes,
we both love it.
Yeah.
The story is that it's so astounding when you hear someone paid $100 million. You're like, oh, my God, what happened? What went wrong?
Yeah, they were on the losing end.
Right, they were on the losing end. They must need to go to therapy and sue their lawyer. The truth is, in this case, Dr. Dre's net worth was around $800 million at the time of the divorce. They had been married for 24 years, and they lived in a state where assets would have been divided 50-50. So, Todd?
Yeah, and, you know, at the end of the day, the wife, if there wasn't a prenup, would have probably been entitled, like Gemma said, to at least, you know, $400 million. So $100 million because of a prenup that his wife was actually contesting, and they had a proceeding to find out whether or not the prenup was valid. The case went on for about a year and a half. And, you know, Dr. Dre, from what I've read, said that basically he would have been willing to give her more than $100 million if she wasn't fighting so hard about the prenup. Yeah.
That's interesting.
She claimed it had that he had torn it up, the prenup, which was highly unlikely, but that was one of her claims. And
wait, like just tore up the document?
Yep, that's what she claimed.
In
but
the middle,
by the way,
yeah.
That's not how you rescind it anyway.
I was going to say, what happens if you folded it in your pocket and a little bit of it ripped? That doesn't negate the prenuptial agreement.
There's a reason why we always, you know, there's a prenup that goes to both of the attorneys,
yes,
both of the parties,
right,
and usually the CPA.
That's right. I wish I could do that with my IRS document. Oh, I tore this. I'm sorry. It's null and void. It is a good point, though, that prenups can be challenged.
They can.
And you want your prenup to be done by someone who knows what they're doing, right?
Correct. And they're fraught with peril for everybody. And you really do need to look through it and be careful. And every case is different. I mean, someone may have their own business. Someone may be employed. Someone may be a trader. So you have to correct for...
Traitor or trader?
Well, all of the above, you smarty.
Right. Uh-huh.
I guess it depends which comes
first.
Yeah,
right, right.
But anyway.
Cryptocurrency, as we talked about last time, too.
But someone could be a trader by trade.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of these things are changeable, and you need to account for those. You're trying to look ahead with a non-crystal ball and close for all the possible loopholes.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're on the same page and you're closing for success for both of you, it's very doable.
Mm-hmm. I've seen prenups on television, and I've seen some things that I don't actually think are enforceable. And I think we all have examples of it, whether it's looks or some other things. We're going to take a break for the news, and then let's break down some of these myths and what is or actually not able to be in a prenup. And your questions. Phone lines lighten up again. Get in the line. 312-981-7200. The wonderful folks from Allen and Glassman Chartered. 312-853-3000. We'll do more after the news here on WGN. Here with Todd Glassman and Gemma Allen. You guys ever get sick of that song or no?
I just told Gemma to put her headset on so she could hear it. We love it.
Exactly.
One of our themes.
Yeah, we're talking about all things divorce and prenups, and we're going to get to some of those enforceable or not enforceable things in a prenup, but we're getting a load of questions, so let's continue those. And Gemma, this one's for you, 708. I'm a funeral director, and I see firsthand how exes come out of the woodwork to get a descendant's assets, and then the funeral director adds, get a prenup and a will before things go sour. You ever hear anything like this?
Well, I'm going to applaud him and say it's sort of a sad story, but I will also tell you that a good divorce judgment would prohibit that from happening.
Okay.
So a good divorce judgment would have a complete waiver of all of anyone's rights as a former spouse, including, and it should be in the judgment, but also it's the law, any insurance benefits that would accrue to you. So you're out of someone's life. The partnership is broken with a divorce and legally broken.
Right. And the texter's not saying that they're successful, but they're trying.
Well,
and so
and
there you
so
go.
Sad.
I know.
I mean, it's especially, I've often been told, though, that probate is even sadder than divorce on its saddest day.
Yeah.
So
that's a good call. And we often have experts in here talking about estates and wills, and make sure you got those things in order, as we talk about here
true
as well. Yeah. Hey, why don't you go ahead and put on your headphones here, Tom? We're going to go to Sam. Sam, you got a question. You're on WGN. How are you doing this afternoon, Sam?
Hey, really good, and I want to thank you for your time and all of your professionalism. Hey, quick question for you, okay? So I went through a divorce about 10 years ago and simply stated I had a divorce decree. I fulfilled all my obligations. Matter of fact, my kids kind of moved in with me because they were kind of sick of their mother. And long story short, when my oldest turned 18, graduated high school, as it said in the divorce decree, they wouldn't quit. They kept making me pay. So even though it was written in black and white, I couldn't get my company to not keep taking money out of my paycheck. I had two children. And so after a few months, I you know, went to court. My ex never showed up, hired an attorney. And no matter what I did, they just kept taking the money out of my paycheck.
Like a judge made you pay child support after that, at that point.
Say again?
The judge said you have to continue to pay child support. Yeah. Okay, Todd.
Go ahead.
Yeah, finish up.
I'll listen. Go ahead.
So my advice would be, you know, you want to look at your divorce decree. Usually there's very specific language about what's supposed to happen when the children emancipate. And in Illinois, it's 18 or graduates high school, whichever is last to occur, but usually not past the age of 19. And if you're having an issue where you're still getting your, you know, support deducted from your employer, I would hire an attorney to file a petition to terminate support as soon as the child's emancipated. Get in front of the judge with that petition. You got to get it filed with the court, and you have to say what's a substantial change in circumstances. Well, my son, my daughter's emancipated. They're past the age under the law that they should be getting child support. And all the judges that, Jem and I are in front of would take one look at that and would terminate child support.
That didn't happen for me. Wow. And furthermore, when I said the exact same thing to the judge, she said, one more word out of you and you'll be in contempt and you'll spend the night in jail. And I was muzzled.
I'm so sorry to hear that. One thing that does occur to us, though, because Todd and I deal with this, it sounds like the judge here in this case was difficult, but also the automatic withholding that's sometimes done from a paycheck is disconnected in some ways from the court system and goes on longer than it should. So I'm not sure which part of the process kind of was choking you
here. And you told your employer, Sam, right?
Oh, yeah. They told me they're not going to violate those. They don't want to have a problem with the state of Illinois. But that's not even my question. My question is, I'm thinking about getting remarried again after 10 years, and I'm scared to death, even though you get a prenup, that the judge, even though it's in black and white, won't follow it. And I just, you know,
so that is sort of a myth. I mean, if you, you have an attorney, your fiance has an attorney, you do everything the right way. There's back and forth, there's negotiations, and both the attorneys are, you know, going back and forth on the negotiations. Prenups, there is a statute for it in Illinois, and they usually are upheld. So that wouldn't be a reason not to get it.
But I understand his concern if he's been let down by this system once, and that's why you want, Gemma and Alan to handle this for you, Gemma, right? I mean,
well, I think one of the things, too, is that if you both do it right and it's at arm's length and there's full disclosure, our statute actually favors prenup if it's done procedurally correctly. So I think you can rely on it. And, you know, once in a while there is a sort of a wild card judge, or you catch someone on a bad day. It doesn't mean the system doesn't work for the most part.
True.
It doesn't always work, but please don't lose faith in it because you had one bad experience. And I'm very sympathetic with the bad experience.
Yeah.
We're considering moving to another state. That's how bad it was. So,
oh, wow.
Thank you for your time and I thank you for your answer.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Good luck to you.
Good luck.
Happy marriage and prenup.
Yeah. Keep the faith in the system. We need it to hold. 312-981-7200. Got some other callers coming in. Before we get to those, let's chat a little bit about what is or is not enforceable in a prenup. Things like personal behavior, things you want to say, like, my husband can't gain weight. I am guaranteed that every Sunday we're going to spend 15 minutes, doing something. I think you know. Anything like that able to be put in there or no?
Well, so people dream of it and they want to. And I think the answer is the court will not enforce personal behavior. One of them I really saw, which I get a big kick out of since I'm a mother-in-law, was that the mother-in-law in that case would be barred from the house. So I actually voted against that one, but it is not enforceable.
Okay.
Personal behavior, the court won't do. The exceptions may be, and this is interesting and we've seen it, is if there's a penalty for someone cheating or a penalty for addiction. And,
gambling or drugs or something like that?
Well, something addictive that is destructive to the underlying financial relationship. Not just, oh my God, you gained 10 pounds, I don't love you anymore.
Right. So what you're saying is even if it is in the prenup and somehow they both agree to it and their lawyers agree to it, if that goes before a judge, they'll just strike that out.
Yeah, they're going to say this is not what we went to law school for and became a judge to enforce.
But you want to have something in the prenup that says if a part of it's, not enforceable, that the rest will be.
Okay.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's important.
Correct. So it doesn't negate the entire thing.
Exactly.
Okay, so that that could happen. Someone could say, hey, that's not enforceable. Everything else is in there. Goodbye.
That's correct. That's absolutely right. And it's true. We have a clause in there that says if something falls for whatever reason, the rest of it still stands. So your intent is protected on serious matters, even though someone can get fat.
See, this is why you and your fiance, listeners, you don't want to go to a bar, get out a napkin, and start writing this down with a pen and think it's going to last. You need the experts here to help you on out. Talk about non-enforceable items related to children in custody. I mean, that's a little bit more of a, obviously, a more important matter. What can you tell us about that?
So in Illinois, absolutely cannot put custody or child support related matters into a prenuptial agreement. That's something that if there is a divorce, if there's a breakup, the court will deal with that at the time, because you really don't know, you know, what situations are going to be for the parents or for the children, you know, 5 years before the divorce.
Right.
And also, courts are extremely protective over children.
Good.
So if there's something that's put in a prenup that says, I'm not going to pay child support, or I'm going to pay it at a reduced rate, or somebody's going to get custody, and when there's the actual breakup, somebody's an alcoholic, one of the parents is, you know, doing drugs, they're not going to enforce a provision that's not in the child's best interest.
Okay, good. So it's kind of like when the divorce happens, we're starting fresh on that angle, and we're looking at the actual circumstances on the day that it's happening, and we'll work from there.
Which is really how it should be. I mean, really should all be about the children. And we have many a client that ask if we could put something in there more about child support. And yeah, we say we could put alimony maintenance, but not child support. We got to stay away from that.
What is the difference? I don't know. Alimony and child support. What is the difference?
So child support is actually direct support for the child.
Okay.
And in Illinois, there's a statute that sets forth a formula, generally speaking, although you can deviate from it, but there's a formula. Maintenance, which is what we now call alimony, mm-hmm, also called spousal support.
Oh, it's to the spouse.
Is
okay.
To the spouse, and okay, on behalf of the spouse.
So I guess it's good that I don't know that.
And, well, it's good, right, that you don't know it, but you should have a prenup and you'd never have to know it.
Terry already yelled at me, Gemma. I don't need you on the case here, too. Actually, Gemma, why don't you put on the headphones here, because Susan's got a question, and it deals with a quadro, kind of like what we were talking about before. Susan, you're on WGN. Hey, Susan.
Hi. I went through a divorce about 7 years ago, and I was issued one whole pension and three other half pensions. And another pension came up after the divorce, just the last couple of years. It's a very minor amount, but he won't give me the half that he's supposed to give me. And I don't even think it's worth going to through an attorney. Can I go through small claims court to get it?
I would actually guess that that would not be a good route to go. I think they're going to say this is really something that's in family law. And I also think you're really bright and smart and probably very practical to do a cost-benefit analysis on this. I wouldn't hesitate to write him a letter, though. And I wouldn't hesitate, if you have a lawyer, to just have your lawyer write a letter to his lawyer. But there's issues of why it wasn't discovered before the divorce. It's a little bit more complex than he owes me now.
So you say that even writing the letter might give the fear of God and someone
it
to say, hey,
might.
Yeah.
I've seen...
there's been a letter issued. Oh. He's ignored it.
Well,
I
think you really have to do a cost-benefit and also a psychological cost-benefit analysis. I don't know the dollars involved, but there is an issue of why, and it could have not been your fault at all. He could have hidden it, but it depends on how long ago it was, when you first found out about it. There's complicated legal preconditions to go in and get an asset that you did not get at the time of the divorce.
But you think at a small claims court, they say this is just not our area.
I think they'd say it's not our jurisdiction, not our area of expertise, and it's more complex than he owes me, but I understand he owes you.
Yeah,
neither one of us knew about the pension.
Oh, he didn't know it either?
And then the pension fund was shut down. And that's why they notified me, because I was collecting and he wasn't. And I gave him his address. He wouldn't have gotten it unless I gave him the address.
Susan.
You're a good person.
Yep.
I would say that you do have some legal standing, though, because it sounds like it was a mutual mistake of fact. But again, I don't want to give that advice without knowing a little bit more specifics, how long ago, how much. And, you know, feel free to call us, and we're not going to charge you for talking about it. But I would need more details than you probably want to put on the air.
Yeah, Susan, I would recommend get this number down if you haven't yet, and all our listeners right now, if anything, today.
Go ahead.
It's 312-853-3000. You got that?
I do. Susan, 853,000.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, read it back. That's radio, baby. You just helped the second half of the of what we do here, Susan. All right? Thanks for calling, okay?
Thank you. Susan. Take care.
Yeah. Hey, we got to take a quick commercial break. 312-981-7200. Let's continue to get a couple more calls in, and we'll answer a couple more questions about prenups after this on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Hey, I'm John Hanson. Normally, we only go till 5 o'clock, but today we're going till 6:30, Blackhawks pregame with Joe Brand, my good buddy, so we get an extra hour and a half today. In the next hour, we're going to talk no-knock warrants. We're also going to talk about a new law that protects employees who are alleging sexual harassment at the workplace, something that kind of changes the way that is done so that the company, at least it's supposed to, make things a little bit more public. Right now, a lot of this goes into private arbitration. No one hears anything about it. Some people feel that that helps out the employers a little too much. And I mean, it was wide bipartisan support for this new law. We'll get into that in the next hour. But we're still enjoying our wonderful time with our guests, Gemma Allen and Todd Glassman from Allen and Glassman Chartered. We've been talking about prenups and everything else that's coming on. I love the calls today, folks. People have got questions. Yeah, and you guys will be coming back next month. So if you have any other questions you need, you can call either them immediately at their law offices at 312-853-3000. Or we might be able to sneak in one more call here today. Just a couple more minutes left, so myths about prenups. You ready for a little rapid fire, guys?
Sure. Absolutely.
All right, here's a myth, or you tell me if it's a myth. If I don't have a lawyer, I can get out of it later. Myth?
That's a myth, yes.
Because you had a right to have a lawyer, and if you chose that to not do it, that was your choice because you were, have that ability to get one. You didn't do it, your problem, and you're bound by the document.
Okay. Another thing I've heard before is, ooh, I only signed this 2 or 3 days before the wedding. That's too close to it. I can get out of it later.
Myth. Just did one like that.
Wait, really?
Both attorneys. We had attorneys. We had been negotiating for a couple of weeks. Put all the right language in. It was done thoroughly. It was done accurately. That's a myth.
Well, and the other thing is, I think, Todd, we were really careful to be, you know, have a court reporter there. And both parties said that it was close to the wedding, but they had been negotiated and talking about it for a very long time. And so that duress argument is not going to work.
I was
going to
say, what is the argument? Oh, that there was so much stress and pressure.
The wedding was already set. I had 75 guests coming.
My mind was on the wedding itself. It wasn't on actually reviewing and understanding the language of the prenup that said I wasn't going to get this asset.
The one in New York, the woman actually got ink on her wedding dress. She signed it in the back of the church, and it was upheld.
Yeah! Here's just a lesson, everyone out there. If you're in front of a judge, or you got lawyers in the room, clear your head, clear your mind, because what you're signing has the force of law behind it, right?
Exactly.
That's a good lesson for all the kids out there. Myth or not, the prenuptial agreements, oh, they can be easily challenged and changed.
Challenged.
They can be challenged, but it's not easy.
What about changes? Can you change a prenup?
You can change it. And I think parties can agree to amend it. They can put a sunset clause in the document. So if by the time we have 2 children, I feel like we're both committed to this and we don't need this protection anymore. But it has to be formally withdrawn and formally revoked. But you can amend it. It can be a fluid document and change as your life changes if you're really on the same course.
And you really should have something in there about amending it because, for example, if you know you're making a lot of money when you're going through the marriage and then 10 years later you lose your job or, mm-hmm. like Gemma said, you have a couple of kids and your circumstances change, you certainly want to have the ability to amend who's paying what and what the divisions will be.
Yeah. What about the idea of, you know, we don't need one or, if, you know, I'll sign it now, but come what may, if something happens down the line, we're gonna help each other out. We're going to do more for each other than what's here in the prenup.
Well, that's the wish, but yeah. It's not insurance. That's the wish and the prayer, but it's not a fact. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, love is an action word. So if someone says they're going to do it for you in the future, let's do it now.
Yeah. Hey, you want to put this down, right?
And by the way, you can put clauses in the prenup that says either party can make a gift or pay more and not be penalized. We certainly have that in a lot of ours.
Generosity is always available, but I think what you know and have written down is what you know and have to count on.
Can I say you need to be confidential about this prenup? No social media postings? Is that allowed in them?
We are loving the fact that it's very hard to stop someone from trashing you on social media, but if you put in the prenuptial agreement your own contract that you won't do that to each other, then that is enforceable. And in this day and age, I said everyone, whether, you know, who cares about their reputation, and that's everyone, should think about the confidentiality that you can get in a prenup with regard to social media.
Meaning, like, to uphold this prenup, this person cannot trash me on Facebook
if,
or something like that.
What we have usually in ours is if, you know, you go through a divorce, then, you know, neither party can trash the other in social media. And if you do, to put some teeth into it, we'll put a fine that this party, as part of the divorce proceeding, will be charged, you know, $5,000 each time they put something that goes against the intent of this prenup.
When people are breaking up, they can get very mean-spirited and very assaultive. And, you know, there's always pillow talk. There's always something told somebody you wish you hadn't told them about your past when you stole an apple.
Look, so yeah, I'm glad you guys are putting it in there, but that's half the fun of me scrolling through Facebook. So... You guys are taking away the juicy details of people's lives I want. Come on.
Only the juicy details of their divorce. Yeah. So it's really only on divorce.
Oh, good.
Right. So but that's when it gets really juicy.
And it, it doesn't mean it's going to stop somebody from trashing if they feel like they were wrong. They're still going to do it anyway.
They're still going to do it. Okay, there you go.
Well, but it does really help your reputation. Right. Everyone cares.
There's a lot more we could talk about. If you have questions, allenglassman.com, A-L-L-E-N, glassman.com, or 312-853-3000. Gemma, Todd. It's such a pleasure to see you again, Gemma, and Todd, to meet you. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you so much.
We
have so much fun being with you, and you're such a good host.
Oh, come on. I did pay her to say that. And we'll see you in March. And, obviously call these folks. They are the experts. And happy Valentine's Day on that note.
Oh, my gosh.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Romancing the prenup.
Exactly. Quick break to the news here on WGN. Thank you very much, Ron. Hey, everyone. This is Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Now, normally after 2 hours, this show is dunzo and we're preparing for next week, but guess what, we get a bonus 90 minutes here today as we lead right up to Blackhawks pregame with Joe Brand. A huge game tonight, Hawks in St. Louis, and we're taking you right up till then. Yeah, boy, no-knock warrants have been in the news a lot lately over the past few years. Some real high-profile tragic cases, including one recently in Minneapolis. It got me thinking about how they're even legal in the first place. As far as I've always been told, the police have to announce themselves. So how did that law get changed? How do we now allow no-knock warrants in this country? And will it change moving forward? The history and the future of no-knock warrants coming up after this on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association on WGN. 720 WGN. Hey, everyone. A very happy Saturday. Well, I guess we can call it Saturday evening here now as the sun is just about to set. Although you've probably noticed that sunset getting later and later. I just looked it up. 5:19. Boy, that feels pretty good. I feel like it was just yesterday. The sun was setting around 4. Well, we made it to 5:19 already. Our sunrise is before 7 a.m. That's something cheery to look for, especially on a chilly February evening. This is Let's Get Legal. It's powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. My name is John Hansen. Normally, we're done by 5, but we're taking you to Blackhawks pregame today. And I'm really thrilled, not only, of course, for the Blackhawks game tonight, of course. You all know I work for the Blackhawks, too, over at the United Center. But I am just thrilled to have an extra 90 minutes to really break down two big things. A little bit later in the hour, we're going to talk about a new bipartisan law that has been voted on, I assume will be signed soon by President Biden, that really flips the turntables for an employee who is claiming sexual harassment or sexual misconduct in the office. A lot of those cases would go to arbitration by mandate, would never see public eye, and a lot of people felt that gave employers huge benefits over employees. Well, the switch has been flipped a little bit. We'll break that down a little bit later on. But boy, one of the most controversial things you could talk about right now are no-knock warrants. And the shooting death of Amir Locke by a Minneapolis SWAT officer serving a no-knock warrant during a homicide investigation, of which Locke was not a suspect on, at least everything I've read about that, it's prompted calls for an end to the practice of serving high-risk warrants on homes without giving occupants a chance to answer the door. Boy, it's a hot topic. It's an important one to understand. And helping us do that is criminal law professor and associate dean at the University of Illinois College of Law. We're talking with Margaret Etienne. How you doing, professor? Thanks for joining us here today.
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, John.
Yeah, it is a difficult conversation to have, obviously, and we're talking about life and death situations. So I just wanted to get an interpretation. First, let's start here. You know, I've always been taught, I feel like we were taught, the police with a warrant, they have to knock, they have to announce themselves. That goes back to like English common law. Where in American history did these no-knock warrants start to become more acceptable? Do we have it pinned down anywhere?
I don't know if we have it exactly pinned down, but what we started to see was really around the 1970s, where and the sort of advancement of the kind of war on drugs situation that we started to see more and more no-knock warrants. But you're absolutely right that typically, you know, a warrant requires that you go through certain procedures, right? That you knock, that you say who you are, that you have, of course, you know, reasonable suspicion to get the warrant in the first place and that sort of thing. And we started to see this idea, particularly this notion that the evidence was going to be destroyed, right? That's where we started to see that a lot with the sort of so-called war on drugs.
Oh, that like paraphernalia would be flushed down the toilet or whatever the case may be. Okay, so they were like, well, we have to get it. And, you know, I guess that can make some sense, right?
Well, yeah, in some situations, you know, I mean, it depends again how, I mean, now we've rethought a lot of the old way of thinking when, you know, with the sort of war on drugs. Yeah. But if you've got a ton of drugs, you're not going to be able to flush all of that down the toilet or burn it or, you know, and if you've got just a small amount of drugs, then the question becomes, is it worth it? Right. Because we do also gauge these sometimes on the seriousness of the crime, because if you're issuing a no-knock warrant, it's a dangerous situation. Typically, and is it worth the lives of the officers or the people inside? You know, if you're really dealing with a small amount of drugs, if you're dealing with the kind of stuff that could get flushed down the toilet easily, in other words, then the question now we ask is, well, is that even really worth the danger of the no-knock warrant?
Right. And we've actually already had some texts in from Chicago police officer spouses, two of them saying even police officers do not like doing it because they're, you know, this is dangerous, obviously, for innocent bystanders who might get caught up in it. But of course, it can be very dangerous for police officers, too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And in fact, there's a significant number of police officer fatalities that happen during no-knock warrants. Yep. You know, more than one might think.
I've been reading about, in preparation for this interview, because I knew nothing about this, certain Supreme Court cases, and we don't have to go through all the litigation of why or what, but that the Supreme Court has sort of held over the last couple of decades that there are situations where no-knock warrants make sense. You mentioned destruction of property. I imagine if it would be, you know, someone's life is in danger on the inside, perhaps, or that they want to at least give local and state judges that discretion, right? Because this is something that still has to go through a court proceeding to be able to get access to be able to do one of these things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So you're right. The Supreme Court, I mean, there's a standard. Not anyone can just get a no-knock warrant for no reason. You've got to usually show that there's, you know, that it's reasonable, right? That you have a good reason to have the no-knock warrant. If you can accomplish the same thing without a no-knock warrant, then, you know, you don't really have a reason to get one. But the other stuff, like you said, it's either because of the worry about the destruction of property or that it will be more dangerous for the people inside or for the officers themselves to execute the warrant, you know, a sort of a typical warrant. So you can imagine, you know, there's a kidnapped kid inside,
right,
or, you know, some reason somebody's got to rush in there and they don't have time to announce themselves or knock. But those are, you know, those are getting to be fewer and fewer situations that fall under that circumstance.
Yeah, I've been hearing from a lot of police experts, in fact, that they're trying to get away from it. In fact, and I don't want to ask you the specifics about this case and put you on the spot in case you don't know, but I think I had read somewhere that it was Minneapolis police that executed this no-knock warrant. But did it happen in St. Paul because the officers there don't even do this? Have you heard of things along those lines before?
Well, even before this case, the Minneapolis, I mean, they had reformed, you know, the change of requirements for no-knock warrants. So they were really already kind of looked down upon and, you know, there were a lot of limitations as to when you could use them. So it's not as if we're only talking about it because this case happened. People have been really concerned about these no-knock warrants for a while.
Yeah, I just want to make sure we reiterate that if a department wants a no-knock warrant, what is that process right? Like, because this could happen in the middle of the day, the middle of the night. How does that look from a judicial perspective? How does it work?
So let me just give a little bit of background then on just getting a regular warrant.
Please.
Right? So, you know, you would need to, an officer would need to be able to show that they had, you know, reasonable suspicion to either get into a place to do an arrest, like they had a reason to arrest the person who was inside, or to do a search. So you need a warrant for either one of those. And you've got to go to a court, go to a judge, explain the basis for the warrant, for just any warrant, you know, and then you get that warrant. And with that, you have the ability to go in into a car or a house or a place where the person would otherwise have privacy or sort of a Fourth Amendment right against a search or a seizure like that. So you'd have to do that no matter what, for mm-hmm. any kind of warrant that you. But if you wanted a special no-knock warrant, then you have to explain, and this is where there's a little bit of distinction, but you're right, the Supreme Court has talked about this, and they say that, you know, in order to justify getting a no-knock warrant, that then the police have to show that the fact that they're announcing their presence and knocking would either be dangerous or would be futile in terms of getting the evidence that they're there to get. That's still a pretty big...
That's a high burden.
Sort of, you know, it's pretty broad, but you at least at that point have to explain to that judge when you go in front of the judge, you know, this is why a regular warrant's not going to do the job in this case. So that's what the Supreme Court has said. But now, over the last several years, and particularly now, a lot of different states have said, okay, we're not getting rid of the no-knock warrant. I mean, there are a handful of states that have gotten rid of it altogether. But most of them have said, you know, we're not going to get rid of it, but we're going to add limitations, right? We're going to add restrictions to this so that, you know, you can't execute it at night if you could otherwise have executed it during the day. Or you've got to show, you know, some sort of additional showing to us as to why, you know, you need this no-knock warrant. Some places have said, you know, we're only going to let a SWAT team execute this. We want somebody, you know, we want professionals who... Not just, you know, all any law enforcement officer, but people who they do this all day long, right? That this is the thing that they do. So different jurisdictions have come up with different ways of limiting how you might, you know, get a no-knock warrant, but only a few have gone and outlawed it altogether.
Yeah, I was reading that I think Oregon and Florida have done that outlawing altogether, Virginia through legislation. So while the Supreme Court has allowed limitations, or excuse me, has allowed exceptions and allowed them, they see this as primarily a state issue that they can, a state or even a municipality can go beyond and prevent them from happening at all.
That's right. So what they're essentially saying is, look, you've got this Fourth Amendment right against unreasonable searches and seizures. We don't think that if somebody goes out, if the officers get a warrant and the judge signs it and says it's okay to do a no-knock, that doesn't violate your Fourth Amendment right. But a state, any state could say, you know what? Fourth Amendment is great, but we want to be even more protective of privacy rights than the Fourth Amendment allows. So states can always protect more. They just can't protect less.
Interesting.
The Fourth Amendment.
Right. They couldn't, strip away your rights that are granted to you by the Fourth, but they could enhance them, if you will. And the same applies to all the amendments, of course.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's really important, I think, to sometimes understand who's making the laws and how they're making them and why they are and what their limitations are at state legislatures. Because I think a lot of times people say, well, why can't the state just do this? And, well, because it takes away part of a right that's guaranteed to you by the federal government, which supersedes, of course, your state rights. All right. I wanted to ask and put a finer point on the idea of you have to prove, like, that doing it during the day is better than doing it at night. Because some people will say they want to do it at night, but you're saying in some places they'll say, look, show me why that's better, and you have to show me that is better and prove it. Otherwise, let's put it during the day, because so many of these tragic cases have happened at night just because of how chaotic the evening can be, and put plain and simple, the lack of light and seeing what's in front of the officer's eyes.
I think that's right. And you know, one way to think about some of this, John, is there's all this law on warrants and no-knock warrants and all of that, but at the same time, there's other laws that allow people to carry firearms legally, and the number of firearms, the sale of firearms has gone up dramatically over the last several years. you've got more and more people with guns to protect themselves. At least that's sort of how they view it. And a lot of that is, you know, somebody breaks into your house and you don't know if it's a police officer or what it is. I think most people think that's exactly the reason that they have a firearm.
Right.
Less likely to happen during the day. And so you kind of, the way I look at it is you've got these different areas of law that no one sat down and thought, well, how is this all going to work together? They just kind of grew on their own and developed on their own. And now there's a conflict. And so that's part of what happened in this case. And, you know, with the law cases, at least what we're hearing is that, you know, he had a valid license to carry this gun. But, you know, what does it mean to have a valid license to carry a gun if somebody can break into your house and then, you know, ask questions later?
Right.
Even if that person is a police officer.
Right. And we have a lot of people that listen to the station that are ideologically, they really support the police officers. And heck, on the station, we just raised a bunch of money to support police officers getting bulletproof vests. And, you know, we can have honest discussions about criminal justice, but also keep our police officers safe. I think that you can do two things at once. But that also strongly support the Second Amendment and the right to carry a firearm and to protect your property. And this is a really hard one, right? This person was laying on the couch asleep, and all of a sudden someone busts into your house, you have a gun, and you fire at them, and then they can kill you because of that. It's so hard to square this circle, and it's a really difficult thing. The last question I have for you, and feel free to say I don't want to look into a crystal ball, but where do you see the future of no-knock warrants going? Is this a discussion that will continue both in local municipalities and also in state legislatures?
Yeah, you know, I would say, I mean, first of all, let me say, you've got it exactly right. I think that you know, in terms of trying to do these two different things, this is a tough case. And, you know, the officers who execute these warrants want to be safe.
Yeah.
A lot of times the no-knock warrants kind of put them in jeopardy. So that's part of it. But I would say that I don't see the no-knock warrants going away. I don't see our Supreme Court, you know, getting rid of no-knock warrants. I do think it's possible that we'll see more and more jurisdictions coming up with other limitations about, you know, when do you really need it? Show us that there is actually, you know, a reason for this particular kind of warrant, because it does create a lot of chaos, as you reminded us. And, you know, it's difficult for everybody
yeah.
in that situation. So the kinds of things we're seeing are, you know, requirements that officers wear body cams if they're executing a no-knock warrant. Doing it during the day, as we talked about, a certain amount of time you got to wait, you know, like maybe you got to knock and then you can go right in, or maybe you've got to wait a certain amount of time, or if you have to do it, then you've got to let your supervisor know right after. Right. So there's a whole list of, limitations that are being, that different legislatures are asking about, or, victim families, officers themselves are asking about. So that's the direction I see things going, is kind of an expansion of the limitations for no-knock warrants.
For sure. Professor Etienne, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate your perspective on this, okay?
Oh, you are very welcome. It's always great to, you know, hear your program and know that you're an alum of the University of Illinois, and so I'm always happy to help.
Yeah, I saw your 217 area code. I'm like, yeah, that makes me feel good again. ILL, baby.
That's right.
Have a good one, Professor.
All right. Thanks.
Yeah, a great conversation, an important one. And I think that, boy, as we exhibited today with this fundraiser too, I think everyone can agree that we want those the brave folks who serve and protect to get home at the end of the day. At the same time, we can have honest and real discussions about criminal justice reform. At the end of the day, I think we just want everyone to live through the day, through the night, through their job, through their life, some way, shape, or form, and let cooler heads prevail. And no-knock warrants certainly are an escalation. Not saying they're never, you know, never to be used, but it's an important discussion to have at our local and state levels. Okay, I'll get off my soapbox now. Let's take a break, and then the news here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association on WGN. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. In a little bit, we're going to have our good friend Jeffrey Cullen calling in. He's an employment attorney, and he's going to be talking about a really big bipartisan law that has just been passed to protect employees who say they've been sexually harassed at the workplace. It's a conversation we've been having for decades now, and now employees are going to have another tool in their tool chest to help fight that at the workplace. At least that's what the bill aims to do. Cullen will break it on down for us, but our question of the day... seen as generally harmless years ago, It's now completely outlawed in seven states. Let's go to the phone lines to try and get an answer. And the correct answer is going to get a prize, $50 to the 50-50 restaurant group to be used at any one of the 14 Chicagoland locations, including, of course, Roots Pizza. And let's go to Mary. Hey, Mary, how you doing this evening?
Oh, hi, I'm fine. How are you?
Doing great. What's your guess here this evening?
Well, I think it has something along the lines of candidates running for office.
Okay.
Who don't believe in God.
Okay, so
I think I'm pretty sure it's Maryland, but I don't know. I think it might be more than seven states.
No,
I'm
so not sure. You're not the first person to ask this, and this is insane to me. I can't even believe this. But there are, this is, we got to give you a high five because it's not the answer I was looking for, Mary, but you are there. I believe I saw seven states, and I can't even believe this. I got to look this up during the break. I had an article up, but unfortunately I had closed it at some point, that seven states do ban atheists from serving in their state legislatures. And that seems to me to be an incredible violation of the First Amendment.
And jurors, too.
Well,
jurors,
that's crazy.
For atheists too. Yeah.
Like,
it's weird.
We're a country that allows any religion or none at all. And those people should be able to serve on jurors or should be able to be politicians. That's the voter gets to make that choice. I don't know. Mary, I'm going to look this up and I have an answer for you before the end of the show. Okay, Mary?
All right. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Let's go to the other Mary on the phone line. Hey, Mary, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you.
I was curious, Mary. I was curious, Mary, when I said, hey, Mary, to the last Mary, did you start talking and not realize that you were?
Yes, I did.
I always wonder with that, with when we have multiple of the first name, if the other person goes for like a minute before they realize that they aren't on the radio. But all right, Mary, now it is your turn. What's your guess?
Thank you. My guess is underage marriage.
Underage marriage. Huh, that's not the answer I'm looking for, but I bet more than seven states outlawed it. You know, I don't know because I think each state probably has, do they have their own age? I don't think there's a federal age of marriage. So I guess what would be one state underage or not? I don't even know what it is here in Illinois. I'm giving Iridian a lot of homework right now, Mary. I don't have the answer to that, but that's not our answer. I appreciate you calling, though.
Thank you.
All right, let's go to Jim. Jim, you're on WGN. Hey, Jim.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your guess, my friend?
My guess is vaping.
Vaping. We had that guess way early in the program, and Iridian looked it up. Iridian, using your fingers, do you remember how many states outlawed vaping? I think it was 9 or 10, not 7. So thanks, Jim, for calling. Not the answer to our question, though, okay?
Okay.
Let's go to other Jim. Other Jim, did the same thing happen to you that happened to other Mary?
No.
Okay, good. So what's your guess here today, Jim?
I think you got the same Jim.
Oh, no, this is Jim number 2.
No, I just talked to you and guess Salvia Divinarum.
Oh, okay. Well, I think you were talking to the producer, Jim, but thank you for your call. You didn't get the answer right. Let's go to Eric. Eric, you're on WGN. Hey, Eric.
Hello. I say it's ephedra, which is an ingredient in a lot of sports drinks that was once thought harmful, and turns out it's not.
Oh, okay. So I'm actually looking for something that people thought was harmless before and now has been
right. It was once thought to be harmless.
Oh,
and it has caused a lot of cardiac problems and actual heart attacks.
Oh, well, that's not the answer I'm looking for. I'll have to look up how many states ban that, though, Eric. Thanks for the phone call, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right. Iridian says in my ear that six states ban underage marriage. You think it'd be higher than that? I need to figure out what underage means to that person or to that legislature. I don't know. Let's go to Dawn. Dawn, you're on WGN. Hey, Dawn.
Hi, John. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing swell. What's your guess?
Okay, how about spitting in public, on the street or in public areas?
Oh, isn't that gross when people do that?
Oh, please. Oh.
I don't get it. I've never understood that. Like, I'm someone that has saliva, right? I don't think I have an enormous amount or anything like that. So maybe there is some physical problem where if you're just overloaded with saliva. But I've just never understand the people that just, while they're walking, just hock a loogie as if nothing happened. Like, do you see what you just did?
In some country, I don't know if it's Japan, some country it is illegal to spit on.
I think it's probably Singapore. Street. I know Singapore, remember that there was that famous case. Didn't someone, he was chewing gum and He threw gum out on the street and he was caned. Like, it was a real big national story in the 90s. I hope I'm not butchering the story. Yeah, but that makes sense. Spitting in public by state. Iridian will look that up. That's not the answer I was looking for, Dawn, but that should be 50 states.
Okay, good talking with you.
Thanks,
take care.
Dawn. Yeah, I appreciate Dawn bye-bye. Chiming on in. Let's go to Cindy. Cindy, you're on WGN. Hey, Cindy.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. What's banned in seven states?
I'm going to guess phosphate in detergent.
Phosphate in detergent. Ah, not the answer I'm looking for, but we're going to look that up too. Iridian is getting all this information now and find out what's banned in each state. But Cindy, thanks for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks so much. Here, I'm going to give everyone a clue. It isn't a product that is banned. Okay, it's not a chemical that goes into something. That is not what it is. And we have an immediate answer for Iridian. It's phosphate is in 17 states is banned in detergent. We are learning, we are laughing, we are guessing, and we still don't have an answer. 312-981-7200. Here's the problem. If we don't get an answer today, folks, you may not find out till next week. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break from answering the question of the day right now. You can get on the line if you want. You might be holding for a bit because we're going to talk to Jeffrey Colwin after this break about this employment law that really changes the game in terms of sexual harassment cases in the workplace. After this on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association on WGN. Okay, so the Austin newspaper did a fact check on the thought that atheists are prohibited from holding office in eight states. And PolitiFact actually did the article. They said it's half true. They say, first of all, it's pretty rare to find an openly atheist politician in the U.S. According to the Pew Research, now this was back in November 2021, not that long ago, the only member of Congress who is openly an atheist is Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema, who we've heard a lot about over the last couple of months. She's listed as unaffiliated with religion. Atheists are certainly free to run for Congress, but posts out there say that they're prohibited from holding office in eight states. The states highlighted are Arkansas, Maryland, Mississippi, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Texas. Now, of course, the U.S. Constitution states in Article 6 that no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust in the United States. And yet, seven of the states mentioned in the post above do have language in their constitutions explicitly prohibiting atheists from holding office. Mississippi's constitution says no person who denies the existence of a supreme being shall hold any office in this state. In Pennsylvania, the rule is not as clear cut. So apparently, the bans are unenforceable, they feel like. Because of a recent U.S. constitutional ruling, a Supreme Court ruling back in 1961, the Supreme Court ruled that a person could not be denied the office of notary public for not being considered a believer because it unconstitutionally invades his freedom of belief and religion guaranteed by the First Amendment. So what people are saying is this hasn't really come up because no one runs openly as an atheist, but if it did, the Supreme Court would have your back, that you'd be able to do it regardless of what a state constitution says. That's crazy to me. I'm surprised those laws are still allowed on the books. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong there. 312-981-7200. I always welcome people telling me how wrong I am. All right, let's go to the phone lines and talk to Jeffrey Colwin, who's an expert in employment law. Jeff, how are you doing? Good to chat with you again, my friend.
It's good to hear you, John. How's everything going?
Everything's going really well, and I am a big fan of bipartisan support of anything. And we finally got a real bipartisan law through Congress this week talking about switching how this works between an employer and employee when there's a sexual harassment allegation. Can you walk us through what this new law says?
Sure. The new law is actually an amendment to the Federal Arbitration Act. The amendment is called the Ending Forced Arbitration of Sexual Assault and Sexual Harassment Act. And what the statute does is it declares void any agreement between an employer and an employee that requires the arbitration of sexual harassment cases arising from work.
So right now, certain employees, not every employee, but employees have in a contract or in their handbooks that cases, harassment cases, misconduct cases involving sexual harassment or sexual misconduct would go to an arbiter before it becomes a lawsuit, or it actually prevents it from ever becoming a lawsuit?
Sure. Generally speaking, what employers have been doing over the last 10 to 15 years or so, is putting provisions in employee handbooks that require employees, as a condition of employment, to arbitrate any disputes that arise out of the work relationship. That would mean a dispute over wages, a dispute over discrimination, a dispute over sexual harassment. What this particular statute does is it excludes those category of cases from the arbitration provision, meaning an employee now has a choice whether to bring their dispute in arbitration or bring it in a court.
Okay, just the sexual harassment one, not the wages one.
For now, just the sexual harassment one, correct.
Okay, so this was supported, I assume this is going to be signed by the president. I imagine a lot of people that, maybe in your profession, and correct me if I'm wrong, who advocate for employees, especially in a lot of these cases, this is probably seen as a major victory.
It is a major victory. I think the amazing thing about our legal system is that it's founded on the idea that disputes are decided by members of the community in a jury. In arbitration, disputes are decided generally by one or two people, and typically those people deciding the disputes are compensated by the employer. I would think that a system that allows those disputes to go to court would end up with a more just result than a system that required those disputes to go to arbitration.
In addition to wanting it to be, you know, someone that you're paying that arbitrates these sort of cases, I imagine there's the aspect, too, that I imagine most arbitrations are private, right? Like, they don't get released publicly. In fact, can an employer in an arbitration even talk about it publicly? Like, there has to be, or there did before this new law, there had to be some protections for the employer, I imagine, that this wouldn't become public, right?
That is one thing that I think employers like about arbitration, is that the dispute is not publicly accessible. Today, if you wanted to go look up pleadings and events that occurred in a lawsuit, you can go to the courthouse and pull the court file and, for most cases, read about the lawsuit. In arbitration, none of that information is accessible. So having these disputes litigated in court as opposed to arbitration makes them visible not only to the parties, but to anybody else who's interested in that matter.
When previously cases went to arbitration, were employees allowed to bring their lawyers to arbitration as well?
Yes, employees can have a lawyer at the arbitration, and it does operate in some ways like a court litigation matter. But the difference is that courts are very powerful, and they have a different effect on witnesses, in my view, than testifying in front of an arbitrator. Being in a courtroom as opposed to being in a office conference room has a different effect on the proceedings.
Yeah. All right. So you've been doing a lot of these cases I'm sure you've had to deal with before. So this is going to change things. I imagine how you guys operate as well. This is going to put you and some of your clients in front of more judges as opposed to arbiters moving forward.
I think what this does is it makes access to justice a lot more available to a lot more employees, and that can only be a good thing.
All right. Jeffrey Cullen, hey, I appreciate you even jumping in here just to explain that new law to us. Makes sense to me. If anyone wants to reach Jeffrey Cullen, does great work, 312-641-0300, kmklawllp.com. Jeffrey, I get that all right, my friend?
You got it perfect, John. Thanks so much for having me.
I appreciate that. Thanks so much, Jeffrey Colwin. I always appreciate when he chimes on in. Yeah, that's interesting stuff. I know a lot of people were shepherding that. And I think it passed in the Senate by a voice vote, which is usually held for, like, let's make this National Something Day, or let's honor this fallen person. And, of course, everyone wants to votes in favor of those. Voice votes are pretty they're frequent in the Senate, but not for legislation as impactful as this. So I think a lot of people are applauding both sides of the aisles for coming together on this issue. Tell you what, let's take a break here. Let's get a couple more answers to our question of the day. Let's see if we can nail it down. As we continue, Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association on 720 WGN. John Hansen here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. It's 5:57. Got a couple minutes before the 6 o'clock news, and we are taking you up until 6:30. Joe Brand's pregame. He came in here during the last commercial break. He's got a great pregame show set for you. The Blues against the Hawks. That's always a fun game. I'm going to go down in St. Louis. I used to go down to St. Louis for a lot of those games and have a good old time. I think they were really excited for me when we went back to Chicago. Those are great people in St. Louis. You know what I did once? I don't even have to share this story, but I was, have you ever used one of those apps, you guys, that you can play a jukebox song and you can tell, I think it's Touch Tunes or whatever it is. Well, one thing I did to troll fans once in St. Louis was I was in Chicago watching a Blues Hawks game. They were in St. Louis, so I knew that the bars down there would be packed with fans. And I kept on playing Chelsea Dagger on St. Louis bars jukeboxes, even though I was hundreds of miles away. Just I'd hit the play next function and over and over and over again at certain St. Louis bars where all the Blues fans were. I'd keep on playing Chelsea Dagger. I don't know if I should admit to that, but I did that. I spent my money on that. That's a choice I made. Hey, 312-981-7200. Let's find out, hopefully, an answer to the question of the day. Once seen as harmless, now seven states, completely ban what? Let's go to Dave. You're on WGN. Good evening, Dave. How are you?
Oh, surviving with occasional moments of thriving, but those moments are becoming more and more occasional.
Okay, well, let's get you back to thriving. How about that, Dave?
Sounds like a plan.
What do you got for me for this question?
Well, another guess would be, how about conversion therapy?
Oh, boy. That should be 50 across the board, in my opinion, Dave. And that is a great guess. Currently, 20 states ban conversion therapy for minors. Five partially ban it. In 22 states, there's no state law or policy. A great guess, a great crusade, but unfortunately not the answer to the question of the day, Dave, okay?
Oh, I gave it a try.
I love it when you do, Dave. We appreciate it. Let's go to Edward. Edward, what's your guess, my friend?
Yeah, good evening. My guess is going to be plastic bags.
It's a great guess, right? And certainly a lot of municipalities ban them, and you're really close on states. All the statistics I see say that 8 states have banned single-use plastic bags. California, Connecticut, Delaware, Hawaii, Maine, New York, Oregon, and Vermont. So you're one off, my friend. I'm sorry. Edward is done. I didn't get it right. I'm just going to hang up. Let's go to Anita. Hey, Anita, how are you doing this evening?
Hi, I'm good.
What's your guess tonight?
The sale of flavored tobacco.
That is a menthol. That's a great guess. I don't know the answer to that. That's not the answer to the question of the day, Anita. I'm sorry.
Okay.
All right. We got an extra half hour of Let's Get Legal after this. The news on WGN. Fourth hour here of Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Hey, everyone. I'm John Hanson. And just a quick note. Hope you got the chance to listen to Your Money Matters, which is hosted by me, also produced by Iridian Across the Glass. We're together 5 days a week. And four of those days are for Your Money Matters, our new show that really breaks down all the ins and outs of how to make more money, how to save more money, and how to live the life you want to lead. It is on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 6 o'clock till 7 o'clock. Hope you got a chance to listen last week. If not, that's okay. We'll be back next week too, and for the foreseeable future. All right, 312-981-7200. I want an answer to the question of the day, and I want it to be the right one. Let's go to Roger. Roger, you're on WGN. Roger, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great, big guy. How about you?
Good. How do you know I'm a big guy, Roger? Come on.
Well, because I'm under 5'7". You must be bigger and sound bigger.
Okay, I am 5'10". You are correct. 5'10 and a half, about. Yeah, there you go. You should get something for that, some sort of prize, just by knowing by the sound of my voice. But go ahead. What's your guess to the question of the day, which, to remind folks, is which states are, as seen as harmless in the past, 7 states have completely outlawed this. 5 completely allow it, including Michigan and Missouri. That was the clue I just gave. Roger, what's your guess?
Fireworks. Kaboom.
Great guess. And I know that because Illinois, right? That was maybe your hunch for that. Illinois, Ohio, and Vermont, they have very strict fireworks laws. Massachusetts, though, is actually the only state that completely bans fireworks. So while it was a great answer, it was not the answer, Roger. I'm sorry.
Oh, all right. Take care.
That's great. Let's go to Eddie. Eddie, you're on WGN. Hey, Eddie.
Hi, Mr. Hanson. Hey, before I submit my guess, I'm a retired firefighter, and I just want to say God bless our firefighters, and thank God those 7 Chicago firefighters are okay, and God bless all our firefighters.
Amen. And Eddie, I don't know if you know this, but my father has been a fire chief in the suburbs, and both my brothers are firefighters, and I'm right there with you, my friend.
No, thank you. My guess is marrying your cousin.
Okay, and you're talking about like your first cousin, right?
No, that would be my inclination,
yeah.
Correct.
So, Eddie,
yes.
Eddie, I was amazed because I saw your answer up on the screen, and I thought that marrying your first cousin was illegal in all 50 states. I don't know why I thought that, and I'm certainly passing no judgment on anyone when I state these facts, but I was really surprised that only 24 states prohibit marriages between first cousins. Many allow it. There's some states that are kind of in the middle, like if both parties are over 65, some have age limits on it, some you have to have a proof of genetic counseling, and it's I thought it was completely banned in the country. I'm obviously wrong about that. So it was a deep dive for me. I had no idea about the laws of marrying your cousin, but I do now know a little bit more thanks to you, Eddie, but it is not the answer to the question of the day.
Thanks for both your shows. Love them.
Hey, I appreciate that, Eddie. Thanks so much for listening,
right.
Okay?
Bye.
All right, let's go to Karen. Karen, you're on WGN. Good evening, Karen.
Hi, good evening.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you. And yourself?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. No one ever asks me. I appreciate that. All right, so what's your guess to the question of the day?
My guess is using chains on your tires in the winter.
Okay, so that's interesting, too, because I figured that if you needed to use chains in the winter, no problem. But there are each state has crazy chain laws on tires. But it's not the answer to the question of the day.
Okay. Well, I tried.
You tried, Karen.
You have a good night.
You do, too. I want the answer to the question of the day. I hope we get it. Let's go to Wendell. Wendell, how are you doing? You're on WGN.
Hey, I'm good. Nice to listen to the show.
Appreciate that. What's your guess?
I'm going with wormwood, a.k.a. absinthe, which has kind of gone back and forth between banned and encouraged.
Yeah, banned, absinthe, which I think I had some in Vegas once, but I don't think it was real absinthe. I think it was like fake one. Like it was... I did something legal, people. I'm not saying I did. But people were like, ooh, yeah, it's like absinthe, but not really. It did absolutely nothing for me. It's not the answer to the question of the day, though. I'm sorry, my friend.
Okay, thanks.
I think real absinthe, and what I'm reading here on Wikipedia, which, of course, is our legal expert, at least mine, says that it was banned in the United States in 1912. And, of course, my real only knowledge of absinthe is from Moulin Rouge, so that's all I know. Let's go to James. James, you're on WGN. How you doing, James?
Hey, very good. Yeah.
What's your guess for the question of the day?
I thought it was probably the death penalty.
Death penalty is not the answer. I do really quickly pulled up the map, and Missouri does have the death penalty, which did follow the clue. Illinois does not. Michigan does not have the death penalty, at least as of 2021. But death penalty states, you've got them in 24, no death penalty in 23. So it's more split down the middle.
All right.
Hey, but James, I appreciate the guess. I don't know how else to try and give a clue for this one. Oh, Iridian knows the answer because I told her. 312-981-7200. How about I tell people when it was really, like, popular? Would that help, Iridian, you think? Okay. It was really big, at least from my understanding, in the 60s and the 70s. It's really popular then. 312-981-7200. Hopefully get a question or the answer of the day. I got your top three legal stories from the week, too, if we get to it here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. This is Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. We got 10 and a half minutes left till Mr. Joe Brand takes over for Blackhawks pregame against the St. Louis Blues. By the way, the Blackhawks have been playing on the road after their Olympics break. They're back at the United Center on Thursday. I'm so excited. We got a Thursday home game, a Friday home game. Very rare to get back-to-back home games. A lot of these are part of the makeups from with the COVID protocols at the end of December when there was a lot of games canceled. So we got Friday, we got Thursday and Friday at home. And we got Sunday afternoon as well. So 3 out of 4 days, Blackhawks hockey at the United Center. Of course, you can catch all the games here on WGN. But you can come see me at the United Center if you want. We have a lot of fun on the big screen. Me and Jenna Rose are your in-game and arena hosts. And I promise we'll entertain you throughout the game. The Hawks will entertain you, too. And make sure to get those tickets if you want to come see us. 3 out of 4 home games. That's awesome. All right. So where is this illegal? 7 states completely banned this. 5 states still allow it. I told you Missouri allows it. I told you Michigan allows it. And I told you that it was very popular in the 70s. At least that's how my interpretation of pop culture goes. Let's go to Laurie. Is it Laurie? Am I saying your name correctly, or is it Laurie?
Oh, yeah, I know. You're right. I guess, like, topless nudity.
Topless nudity. Was that big in the 70s?
Well, like, you said 60s, so that's what I thought. Maybe you gave a clue for that.
No, yeah, 60. I didn't, you know, I've seen, like, I guess my only interpretation of the late 60s and early 70s, I was born in 84, was what I see on, like, a Woodstock, like, at 69 and stuff.
Well,
so,
yeah, there, and I know, I remember San Francisco, it was, you know, very popular, and mm-hmm. I think it still is.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the answer, but I'm glad you went there. Thanks, Laura. I appreciate it.
Okay. All right. Thank you, John. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. But I will say about Laurie there is that she's got this, like, right mindset of what the actual answer is, right? When you think of hippies, I don't know. I'm thinking of my parents, and I know they were hippies, and my dad had really long hair at one point, and I know him and my mom did this. So if you know my parents at all, or if you can kind of guess what hippies in the 60s or 70s might do that was completely legal, was almost just normal, you wouldn't bat an eye at this. And nowadays, it's complete opposite. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Mike. Mike, you're on WGN. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
What's your guess, my friend?
I guess radar detectors in your car.
Oh, were those a big thing back in the day?
Yes, it was.
Oh, and they are outlawed, right? You're not supposed to have those.
Not in all states, no.
Yeah, that's a good guess. Mike, that's not the answer. I'm sorry.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, okay. All right. Hopefully we're going to narrow down on this sucker. Let's go to Dennis. Dennis, you're on WGN. Hey, Dennis.
How we doing?
I'm doing great. Oh, you got some energy, my friend.
You threw me when I was on hold. You said 60s and 70s. I thought, oh, this is probably not right. But the same guy who said absinthe, I said, distill your own liquor.
Yeah, right. And that's a great guess. And, you know, maybe if it were the 20s, I think that would certainly.
Yeah, that's right.
What you're thinking.
I heard that. But if you watch the show that's quote unquote talking about moonshining, they made some on that show not too long ago.
Oh, okay. I was looking it up during the break because I saw that's what your answer was. And I believe that federally it's still considered illegal to do it at your home. But in some states, it's kind of like the marijuana laws, right, where there's a federal ban, but then some states have allowed it, right?
Yeah, I think you can make so much for your own consumption, just like other stuff.
Ah, right. Well, I need a whole bathtub's worth, Dennis. So. Hey, thanks for calling. I appreciate it, okay?
Okay, if you make some of your bathtub, invite me.
I don't know. I don't know if we're going to make it out alive, Dennis, if I'm making that. All right, my friend, thanks for calling.
Right now.
All right, let's go to Ellen. Hey, Ellen, how are you doing this evening?
Hi. You know, I don't think my answer's right because you guys were talking about it last caller. How about smoking marijuana?
Are you telling me that my parents did that, Ellen? Is that what you're trying to say here?
I don't know.
Well, I'm not going to answer that question. I don't know the answer to that question. It's not the answer, but Ellen, you're not, like, wrong in the world that I'm picturing of. And I know, look, a lot of you listeners were probably around in the late 60s and 70s who could say it's not what it was all, you know, portrayed to be in media. But this is, like, the actual answer is, like, right in that vibe, right? Okay? So,
Ellen, okay.
You got another guess? You go ahead.
How about alcohol? No.
Nah. That's okay.
Thank you, sir.
We're taking
Thank you. I'm going to keep listening.
All right. That's the whole goal of this segment. Let's go to Ann. Ann, you're on WGN. Hello, Ann.
Hi. What? Is it streaking?
It's not streaking, no. But streaking, again, paints a picture of what I envision people like this would do.
Okay. I've ever done that, but that was my guess.
Yeah, okay, Ann. Yeah, way to add that right at the end there, okay? All right. Ann, have a good one, okay?
All right, thanks, John.
All right. 312-981-7200. I don't know if any of my clues are helping. I don't know if any of them are hurting. We'll have to wait and see. Let's go to, is that Pat on line 5? Hey, Pat, how are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. How's your day going?
Oh, not too bad.
All right. I've given a lot of clues, and I've painted maybe an accurate picture of what I think the 60s and 70s were, considering I didn't live through it. But what is illegal completely in 7 states? What is allowed in 5 states, including Michigan and Missouri, that was popular in the 70s? What's your guess, Pat?
My guess is hitchhiking.
And we don't have to wait another week because that is the answer.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Who's celebrating with you behind you?
It's my wife, Sarah.
Now, were you guys hitchhikers or no?
No. We're 80s babies.
Oh, okay. You're 80s babies just like me. So maybe that's what I needed, another 80s baby to interpret what we thought the 70s was all about. But yes, the answer is hitchhiking. I was driving back from Wisconsin today and knew I had to come up with a question. And I was like, oh, hitchhiking. I'm curious. That is the answer. So I'm going to need you to stay on the line. But everyone of a certain age might have a hitchhiking story. We don't have much time left, but if you got a good one, feel free, 312-981-7200. But they did a really cool article at Vox, which is a news outlet, talking about hitchhiking. And there's a lot of, you know, interpretations that hitchhiking went away because people thought it was overly dangerous, right? Like, I think hitchhiking is often seen as the peak of, unfortunately, when a lot of serial killers operated in the Pacific Northwest, up and down California. There certainly were very high-profile cases, and police really cracked down on it in the late 70s and 80s. And law enforcement used a lot of scare tactics to make it seem dangerous, but most people you talk to in the 60s and 70s, it was such a normal thing. But they actually think that hitchhiking didn't go down because of fear. It's because actually car ownership has gone up incredibly between the 60s and 80s, that a lot more people now own cars. It was much more common in the day for younger people not to have the money to afford a car. Parents didn't buy kids cars for their 16th birthday or anything like that. And they think that just general car ownership going up really led to a complete downfall of hitchhiking. And I'm really giving you way more than you need to know about hitchhiking, but I did a deep dive into it. And yes, as of the latest numbers I saw, you can still do it in 5 states. You can't do it in 7. You can't do it in Oregon, Utah, Arkansas, Tennessee, Pennsylvania, Maine, or Hawaii. And everyone else is kind of in the middle, where you can ask for rides, but you're not supposed to do it on the road. So, Pat, I just gave you everything you needed to know about hitchhiking, okay? Pat's like, that's enough. Pat stays on the line. They got the answer right. They're going to get a $50 gift card to the 50-50 Restaurant Group, which, of course, has great locations like Roots Pizza, and they are our winners. I am so glad that we got an answer to the question of the day. It's like a huge relief. 312-981-7200 if you've got any other guesses. Boy, the text line was going crazy. So many people were talking about streaking. And I've been talking with someone here at the station who even saw someone trying to put the thumb out on the on an entrance ramp to the Dan Ryan. And I was thinking to myself, I don't think I've ever seen someone hitchhiking on the road. It just doesn't happen anymore. And we got really quickly, Doc, you're on WGN. How you doing, Doc?
I'm fine.
You got 35 seconds for this story. Go ahead, my friend.
Okay. Well, I used to hitchhike a lot. I went all over the country, and I had some goofy rides, but never a dangerous one.
That's good.
But one time I was coming back from Las Vegas, somewhere in, I don't know, Colorado or Nebraska or someplace, and I got picked up by a group of people in a van, and it turned out that they were all Black Panthers.
Whoa, really? Wow.
Yeah, so, but I'm a blues player, and I had a harmonica with me, and I had some good weed.
Okay.
I shouldn't probably say that, but anyways.
That's okay. It's anyway, legal here now.
So. It turned out to be one of the best rides I ever had.
I was going to say, that trip took a pleasant turn there, Doc, there at the end. Sorry, I didn't let you tell the whole story, but that certainly was an interesting ride, I imagine, coming home from Vegas. Oh, and I'm out of time. I don't get to tell my parents' hitchhiking story through Mexico. I'm sure they're really displeased that I don't get to share that one with you all. Hey, that was a great 3.5 hours of Let's Get Legal.